A look at the impact of that. Meanwhile, the hurricane blowing in, 7 deaths already. It's feared the death toll will rise. Jamaica's Minister for Local Government, Desmond Mackenzie.
Jamaica, this is not the time to be brave. I've been saying for 1 week, don't bet against Melissa. It is a bet we can't win.
Coming back to this country, the morning after pill available free of charge in pharmacies. More pressure calling for the end of the two-child benefit cap and farewell to a national treasure.
What are you looking at me like that for?
Basil, there's a kipper sticking out of your jacket.
Brunella Scales as Sybil from Forty Towers, a full appreciation. News is next on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Hurricane Melissa is set to hit Cuba after leaving a disaster zone in Jamaica. Officials in Jamaica have warned of devastating impacts, with hundreds of thousands of people without power and communications. The storm brought sustained winds of 185 miles per hour to the island. Halshane Burke is following the story for Radio Jamaica News.
The authorities have said that this is among the worst disasters that Jamaica has ever experienced. Black River Hospital was severely damaged, and a number of other hospitals were also impacted by the storm. 15,000 people are in shelters dotted across the island.
Thousands of British tourists remain stranded in Jamaica. The Foreign Office has opened a crisis centre and says the UK stands ready to support the recovery effort. The migrant sex offender Hadish Kabatu has arrived back in Ethiopia after being deported from the UK. He was released from HMP Chelmsford by mistake last Friday. LBC's Fraser Knight has more.
The Home Secretary says she pulled every lever to deport Kabatu, who was put on a plane last night with no right to return, with Shabana Mahmood saying that Britain's streets are safer. But of course, there was that brief period when he was back on the streets in a mistake that the Prison Officers Association says isn't a one-off. In fact, they say it's happened 5 other times in the past week alone, a figure that the Ministry of Justice disputes.
Dozens of people are reported dead after a series of Israeli strikes in Gaza. The Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, ordered the attacks after accusing Hamas of killing a soldier and staging the recovery of a hostage. Hamas has rejected the claims and insists it's committed to the ceasefire. Rachel Reeves has insisted the UK does not have to accept bleak forecasts for the economy. The Chancellor is widely expected to impose tax rises in next month's budget as she faces a barrage of grim predictions, but she's promised to defy the trends, again insisting there can be no return to austerity. Women are now able to get the morning after pill free of charge in pharmacies across England. Emergency contraception was already free from GPs and sexual health clinics, but could cost up to £30 from chemists. Health officials say it's one of the biggest changes to sexual health services since the 1960s. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 96.96. It closed up 42 yesterday. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 13. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most places, strong winds and occasionally heavy rain further north, a high of 14 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 3 minutes after 7, Wednesday, October the 29th. The fragility of the ceasefire in the Middle East tested yet again as a series of deadly airstrikes ordered by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. We'll give you the details on that and then, of course, take your reaction. How can that... Remember, it's not a peace deal that was brokered by the US. It's only a ceasefire. How can that stay in place? Meanwhile, back here at home...
An Afghan national who came to the UK by lorry has been arrested after 3 people were stabbed in West London on Monday. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma in Uxbridge with the details.
Plus, the arrests of migrants working illegally has hit a record high after a series of raids. Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood.
With the huge increase in the number of raids under our government, the removal of over 1,000 people, that's an 11% increase on what we inherited. The numbers are still not where I want them to be. I want to go further and faster.
As Jamaica is declared a disaster area, the death toll currently at 7, but very valid fears that that's going to grow. We'll give you an update on that. And again, back home on the political agenda.
More than 40 economists, academics and policy experts have joined forces to call on the Chancellor to end the two-child benefit cap. But what does the government think? I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with the exclusive report.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Israeli aircraft launched strikes on Gaza yesterday after the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordered the attacks, accusing Hamas of killing a soldier and stalling the recovery of a hostage. The attacks, which Palestinian health officials say have killed dozens, currently the number that we have confirmed is nine, but that is nine too many, are the latest example of violence in an already fragile three-week-old ceasefire agreement. Here's some of the U.S. news networks breaking the news.
Breaking news at this hour, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is ordering immediate and powerful strikes on Gaza.
Breaking news in the Middle East. We're hearing of strikes in Gaza. This is the first major test of this U.S. brokered ceasefire.
Today in Gaza, the latest test of a tenuous ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordered what he called powerful strikes in Gaza.
Now, Prime Minister Netanyahu said yesterday Hamas had violated the ceasefire by turning over incorrect remains in a process of returning the bodies of hostages to Israel. The Prime Minister said remains handed over on Monday belonged to a hostage whose body had already been partially retrieved by the IDF during the war. The deal has been under strain because of the slow progress returning the dead hostages. Hamas has freed the 20 remaining living hostages and returned 15 remains, but 13 are still in Gaza. Shosh Bedrosian is a spokesperson for Israel's government. She said yesterday,
Israel has not only waited patiently during this time, but gave Hamas an opportunity to retrieve and hand over all of our 28 deceased hostages in captivity. We are fully aware and have knowledge that Hamas can locate and retrieve the remains of our 13 deceased hostages that are still in Gaza right now.
So what of the U.S. and their hopes? Speaking at an event in Washington, D.C. last night, Vice President J.D. Vance said,
the president achieved a historic peace in the Middle East. The ceasefire is holding. That doesn't mean that there aren't going to be little skirmishes here and there. We know that Hamas or somebody else within Gaza attacked an IDF soldier. We expect the Israelis are going to respond. But I think the president's peace is going to hold despite it.
First to Nivi Feldman, who's UK lead of the Hostages and Missing Families Forum. Thank you for coming on. How confident are you that Hamas has the details, all the details that are required in this case? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Thank you for having me. So we know that Hamas definitely knows the location of 10 of the hostages that are still being held. Five of them they can just release today if they wanted. There's no logistical problems bringing them out. And IDF assumes that five of them need, some extra machinery to extract them safely from Gaza.
How do you know that?
IDF has the intel. I think during the captivity since 7th of October, with time they've gathered intel and they had a really good idea where all the hostages were, and they couldn't reach them because Hamas put them in houses or tunnels that are detonated. So if anyone comes through, they're all going to be killed.
How supportive are you of the action ordered by the Israeli Prime Minister yesterday, Nivi?
You know, it's really hard days. It's really, really hard days. Hamas have broken the ceasefire on so many accounts. They promise that the ceasefire will come into effect and all the hostages will come out, and they haven't done that. They've already killed three IDF soldiers. The IDF soldier killed yesterday, it wasn't a killed by mistake. There was a sniper that took him out, plus an RPG. And, you know, Hamas, no one's talking about it, but since the ceasefire came into effect, they've killed 500 of their own Gazan civilians in 2 weeks. It's like these numbers are just blowing my mind. They're supposed to be putting their weapons down and letting the war over, and they're tormenting the hostage families. They're tormenting them.
The numbers are absolutely horrific, as you say, Nivi, but how does killing at least nine Gazans help the situation?
We're at a point that Hamas have to let the hostages back. You know, they've...
But if I pick you up on what you just said, you claim that Hamas have killed 500 of their own people. Why would Israel, authorizing these strikes, killing at least nine, why would that change their mindset, do you imagine, Nivi?
Look, I really am not in the IDF. I advocate for the last 2 years for the hostage families. So I'm not an expert on why IDF and why the Israeli government are doing what they're doing. We see, you know, yesterday, he was a father for five children that was killed, and he had to be there to, you know, under orders to defend Israel. It's the defense forces. He's been killed. He's been murdered. And they have to do what they can to keep, you know, the rest of the soldiers defending Israel safe. It's really sad, you know, when they kill, when any person is killed, it's a whole universe killed, whether it's Israeli or Jewish or Muslim or Palestinian. And it's devastating. And, you know, there's nothing more that than I want and Israel wants than let the situation finish, let the war be finished. We all need safety on both sides.
Lastly, on that point, how much do you share the vice president's confidence that the ceasefire, he describes it as a skirmishes, but the ceasefire will essentially hold?
I don't know. I just know that I'm speaking with families that are tormented. The hostage that came back yesterday, Ofir Tzarfati, it was the third time that his remains are coming back. So his family had to bury him three times.
Good gracious. Nivi, thank you for your time. Nivi Feldman, your UK lead of the Hostages and Missing Families Forum, 11 on minutes after 7. Listening to that, Brigadier John Deverill, who's former Director of Diplomacy at the Ministry of Defence and senior British officer in the Palestinian territories. Can I start with one of the last questions I put to my other contributor, Brigadier? How confident are you that the ceasefire, as it is, might hold? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I'm not confident. I mean, in response to what's been happening in the last 24 hours, the US president himself has said that nothing will be allowed to jeopardize the ceasefire, and he's also said that Israel has the right to hit back. I can answer one question with which your last speaker was grappling, which is why has Israel responded with such indiscriminate and overwhelming force? Firstly, because that's their doctrine, to use overwhelming force, and that, of course, leads to the high risk of violations, unjustified killing of innocent people. And secondly, of course, because, as we've heard so many times, Netanyahu himself wants to stay in power, and he needs to keep his right-wing extremist coalition together for that purpose, and they want to go back to war. And so, therefore, he's walking a tightrope. At the end of the day, to go back to your question, it's an unknown to what extent President Trump can control him.
Brigadier, you're a military bloke. You know war. Isn't it wholly likely that, tragically, some of the remains might never be found, simply as a result of what's taken place there?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think, Nick, the thing is, for thank goodness, for the vast, vast majority of people living in this country, we simply have no idea, thank God, of the conditions in which people are living in Gaza, completely ghastly, and a place which is largely destroyed. To your point, how would it be possible to find, to guarantee to find every single remain of every single person in double quick time? It's quite frankly ridiculous, and it goes back to my point that this is an excuse. Excuses are being looked for by the extremist government of Netanyahu to do what they did in terms of overwhelming force response.
Lastly, Brigadier, what do you see as happening next?
Well, at the same time, Nick, of course, the negotiators are grappling with three key questions. Firstly, what will the international force look like? And, of course, different views pertain on that. The second thing they're grappling with is the issue of disarmament of Hamas, which, of course, is a thorny subject. I mean, we ourselves have had some experience of that with regards to the IRA. In the end, the word they used for that was decommissioning. And the third thing, of course, is future governance. And we need to get over this very, very difficult hurdle, mindful of the suffering of innocent people, before we could even get close to those three key things which need to follow.
Grateful as ever for your time, sir. Thank you, Brigadier John Deverill. You served as Director of Diplomacy at the MOD and Senior British Officer in the Palestinian Territory. So let's just wind back a little of what we've heard. There are still, and let's speak, these are all human beings. There are the remains of 10 still to be returned. The claim there that five could effectively be returned, the remains returned today. The other five, though, well, they may never return. How valid or otherwise, then, are the Israeli airstrikes, which there are claims, the number initially is nine, they're talking about dozens, there's another figure that says 33, but lives have been lost, possibly a double-digit number of lives. How justified is the Israeli action? What does it say of the ceasefire? Meanwhile, elsewhere in the world, showing that we really are a global show in every sense of the word, we go to Jamaica.
We've been awake for nearly 2 days now because we can't sleep because of the sound and the shaking. It's just so consistent that you just, that's all we've been hearing.
That's Chantelle Rochester, a British tourist who's on the island. We'll give you a full update after this. 7:15, LBC News headlines then, read by Thomas Watts.
Hundreds of thousands of people in Jamaica are without power and communications after Hurricane Melissa made landfall. The Home Office has confirmed Hadish Kabatu has arrived back in Ethiopia after being deported from the UK. Dozens of people are reported to have been killed in Israeli strikes in Gaza. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for many places, strong winds and some heavier rain further north, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the Essex stretch of the M25 anti-clockwise to junction 28 at the A12 after a car was on fire. The fire's now out, but two lanes stay closed, so there are lengthy delays from before junction 29 at the A127. Clockwise is open, but very busy because of onlookers. On the M20 westbound, there are severe delays this morning from junction 6 at Bluebell Hill to junction 4 at Leybourne. Now, earlier on, a car broke down and the overnight roadworks finished late as well, so that's why it's so busy. In East London, in Peckham, the A2 Old Kent Road remains closed in both directions.
LBC.
Agent parents, if your child experiences bedwetting, your mission, should you choose to accept it, is Operation Leak Free Night. Step 1, dress your little ninja in Pampers Ninjamas. Step 2, complete the evening activity chart. Toilet, PJs, lights out. Each task earns a Ninjama star. 3 stars, you've unlocked peak ninja powers, leak protection and unstoppable confidence. Mission accomplished at sunrise. Try Pampers Ninjamas now. Ninjamas.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. Stayshore is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So stay sure with Stayshore Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of 5-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at stayshore.co.uk/reviews.
Imagine a delicious patty nestled between two buns with cheese and ketchup. It's not a burger. That patty, it's actually sausage, which makes this a sandwich. A breakfast sausage sandwich. The new $1.99 sausage sandwich from McDonald's. Made with RSPCA assured pork. Until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
I'm telling you, raise taxes. That's how.
Cut spending. Less waste. More sense.
Move north. Get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
18 minutes after 7, come to your calls in the moment. The death, I have to tell you, I was just talking to my colleague there. CNN are saying the death number is in the low 40s. The BBC is reporting it's in its 30s. The newspapers, which obviously printed, they get it into just about double figures. It's those authorised by the Prime Minister airstrikes. Coming to your calls on that in just a moment. Quickly at the front pages, this is what you're waking up to, or for some of you, of course, going to bed too, after you put in your night your day shift and get your own rest now, or your night shift. The Times has this on its front page. Deadly Israeli strikes in Gaza after Hamas accused of attacks. The other big front page story is what's called the storm of the century for the I newspaper. And indeed, we're going to go to Jamaica and give you more details in a moment. 185-mile hurricane, bigger than Katrina. Good Lord. And a similar line, really, for the Daily Mirror. Hell at 185 miles an hour. The Daily Mail has a story that we're going to give you more details on. Afghan held over murder of dog walker came to the UK in a lorry. I'm going to give you a report on that later in this hour. And lastly, the Sun picking up on a story that we did yesterday, which is the growing anger. Actually, I'm so sorry. I think it was on Monday we did this, actually, involving Lord Lloyd Webber. The growing anger over the raid on the horse racing industry. It's the front page. Save our bets. Budget tax grabs set to hit punters and other sports. A Sun newspaper campaign. Quickly to the front page. Well, the Star in Jamaica, the Jamaican Star, has obviously on its front page, hurricane warning remains in effect for Jamaica. That is also the front page of the LBC app. Jamaica battered by Hurricane Melissa. We'll bring you a report from Jamaica in just a moment. And lastly, one other news website at random is The Independent, and it celebrates the great life of Prunella Scales. Comic actor, best known as Sybil in Fawlty Towers, dies aged 93, and we will have a full appreciation of her career. Anthony, if I can ask you, I know you want to talk about the ceasefire, and I want you to talk about it, but we have actually got a line into Jamaica now, so if you can hold Anthony, I'd like to go to Jovan Johnson, who's senior reporter at the Jamaican Gleaner, joining us from the capital city of Kingston. As we've got a line in, let's take it now. Jovan, thank you for your time this morning. Can you describe what the situation is like around you in the capital city and elsewhere across the country? Good morning.
Thank you very much, Nick, and good, and hello to your listeners as well. Well, it's a pretty calm time now in Kingston. The winds have gone, the rains have disappeared, and it's the early morning, so we can't get yet to see the full scale of the damage from Hurricane Melissa, but at the moment, it's some amount of calm, which we're all very happy for.
Which part of the island did it hit, Jovan?
Well, it made landfall along the southwest coast of the island, and these are some parishes in its wake, St. Elizabeth, and it made landfall in Westmoreland, but it really devastated parts of Westmoreland, parts of St. Elizabeth, parts of Manchester, parts of Clarendon. These are parishes pretty much along the south coast of the country. Right now, more than half of the population without electricity. We're talking about over 530,000 Jamaicans without power. That's about 77% of the customer base of the main power provider in the country. We have 15,000 people in shelters, and we still yet don't have a handle on the scale of the impact of Hurricane Melissa. The authorities, the Prime Minister, expected to lead a tour by helicopter tomorrow just to get a sense of how widespread the damage is.
Do you have any sense yet, Jovan, on how many lives might have been lost in Jamaica?
No, we do not. We know that three persons died in preparation for the hurricane, but certainly since the system has passed, we do not have any idea, and we hope actually it remains that way, okay, where we hope no lives were lost.
And how successful was the evacuation? Is it felt that the country was able to get most people away from where the storm was going to hit?
I think there were challenges with that. We know the authorities issued mandatory evacuations for several flood-prone areas along the south coast. It was difficult. We know that state buses were sent in, but some people were just reluctant to leave their property to get to higher ground, to get to safety. So it was challenging, and we know that just hours before the storm made landfall, that there were calls from some areas the authorities to get emergency persons to come to make last minute efforts to get them out. So it was a challenge, and the authorities really lamented that as the storm bore down on Jamaica.
Look after yourself. Thank you very much for your time this morning. Jovan Johnson, senior reporter at the Jamaican Gleaner, joining us from Kingston. I should just tell you that we understand Hurricane Melissa now has made landfall on the eastern coast of Cuba. It's being monitored by the U.S. National Hurricane Center. It's a Category 3 storm. Wind speeds now of up to 120 miles an hour. Well, if the headlines are right, it hit Jamaica at 185 miles an hour, which, as the headline said, which is more powerful than Hurricane Katrina. Remember the devastation that brought in New Orleans. Now, forecasts say it will take around 6 hours for the hurricane to rip through the east coast of Cuba before heading up towards the Bahamas. My goodness, being heading towards Bermuda. But it's re-strengthened as it heads towards Cuba, says the U.S. National Hurricane Center. We'll keep an eye on it. And, of course, if we get figures to the number of lives lost, currently it's either 7 or 8. I fear it might be more. We'll bring you that. 7:24. Lives lost elsewhere in the world, I'm afraid to say, in Gaza. Again, any figure from about 11 to low 40s, that's what CNN puts it, after those Israeli-authorised airstrikes. Anthony's in Hampstead. Your reaction to that news you're waking up to. Anthony, good morning.
Good morning. Let's start, first of all. 9 days ago, the UK government sent officers to monitor the Gaza ceasefire. Where were they and all the others yesterday? Yesterday shouldn't have happened.
Well, it was under US command, of course, and we don't know how many British officers weren't there. Go on.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So there's, at the same time, we don't know how many people were killed yesterday. What, they managed to count out in an hour 40 people or 11
people?
Well,
we don't. I think in fairness to me, for once, I have made a point of saying we don't have an actual tally
correct.
Yet.
That's why I'm on your side.
Oh, okay.
I agree with
right.
you. I'm not arguing with you, Nick. I'm agreeing with you wholeheartedly. But the most important thing is these monitors, where were they? The end of the day is ask Yvette Cooper, what are these monitors doing today?
What, in reality, what sort of defence could they mount against Benjamin Netanyahu if he's determined to authorise those IDF strikes, would you say, Anthony?
How many times are we meant to get hit whilst we're trying to hold out a ceasefire?
Do you support those airstrikes, Anthony?
Yeah, absolutely.
How is killing possibly, and as I put to the representative from the Missing Families Forum, how is killing innocent Gazans going to get the remains back, Anthony?
That's one thing I do disagree with. Ah. We don't go out, and nobody has actually verified that they were innocent Gazans.
Well,
we don't know for sure.
Oh, what you're saying, that they could be Hamas terrorists?
Correct. We don't know. Nothing's been verified yet. And hopefully the people that Yvette Cooper sent out on the 21st of October will now be able to go and verify what's happened. They're there.
What I find interesting, lastly, is, and I respect you for this, Anthony, you say that what is the UK military doing, what is the UK foreign secretary? Do you not think it's the US that completely drives this equation, and we just follow on quite a long way behind, Anthony?
Correct. At the end of the day is we've already discussed this, that UK is pretty irrelevant, but the fact of the matter is there are officers from the UK government and others there. Let them find out what has happened. There you go.
All right, Anthony, thank you. I will leave it there. Thanks for your input. Let's come to some of the social media that's coming in on this. This comes from Ben in Hendon. Not only are Hamas stalling, they're also falsifying and staging the recovery and handover of bodies. They're self-serving and hideous in the way they behave. They know where all the bodies are. Why else would they stage a recovery? It's part of a charade to prolong things. And, of course, Israel has to take this action to encourage things to move along. I would say to you, Ben, as I said to Antti, and as indeed I said to the representative from the Missing Families Forum, the Hostages and Missing Families Forum, the UK aspect, UK lead, how is killing these... Well, we don't know they're all innocent, but my sense is that some of them will be. I don't see how that's... And this is an incredibly complex situation. I understand that. And it may be that, tragically, five families will never get the remains back. They will never have the moment of closure where they can actually have a proper funeral for their loved ones. So why would continuing to bomb it, why would it change that? This comes from Doug Smith. When you and I are both pushing up the daisies, the Gaza problem will still be going on. And while Hamas exists, it will never end. This comes in from Sean. The IDF do not know where the remains are or if Hamas even have them. You're looking at Gaza, you should dig under the rubble. I don't know if I could dig under the rubble, but anyway, to get remains. How do you expect them to do that with no equipment? Since the IDF can claim someone shot at them and strike, this is no ceasefire. I think Israel is funding militias in Gaza to attack people now. Let's do one last one. Albert in Croydon says, the Israel are the ones launching the missiles, so they must be ones to blame for any ceasefire breaches. All right, do keep them coming. Also, coming up later in the show...
More than 40 economists, academics and policy experts have joined forces to call on the Chancellor to end the two-child benefit cap. But what does the government think? I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with the exclusive report.
Yes, more pressure on that, plus a big domestic story which we're going to be bringing you later in this hour. And you've heard this already on LBC News bulletins. An Afghan national arrested after a dog walker was killed in a triple stabbing entered the UK illegally on a lorry. The 22-year-old was arrested in Uxbridge, West London, on Monday, and we'll have a full report on that. And we also say farewell to a true comedy genius.
I have seen more intelligent creatures than you lying on their backs at the bottom of ponds. I have seen better organised creatures than you running round farmyards with their heads cut off. Now collect your things and get out.
That's the famous Builders episode, isn't it, from Fawlty Towers. That's Prunella Scales, of course, starring as Sybil. That's coming up later in the show. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. It is 7.30. The news is with Thomas Watts.
Hurricane Melissa has made landfall in Cuba after hitting Jamaica with winds of 185 miles per hour. Officials in Jamaica have warned of devastating impacts, with hundreds of thousands of people without power and communications. The migrant sex offender, who was released from prison by mistake, has now arrived in Ethiopia after being deported. Hadish Kabatu was wrongly freed from HMP Chelmsford last Friday. Dozens of Palestinians have reportedly been killed in Israeli strikes in Gaza. They were ordered by the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu after accusing Hamas of firing on IDF soldiers, which the group denies. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for many places, strong winds and occasionally heavy rain further north, a high of 14 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m.
If you're in a position where another £1,000 to find is the difference between you going on holiday and you not going on holiday, I do actually think, for a week, the one family holiday you get to take that year is actually a good reason for you to miss school with your child.
Tom Swarbrick.
With cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
LBC.
Every try, every tackle, every thunderous roar, live. Be there as the England rugby team take on Australia, Fiji, New Zealand and Argentina at Allianz Stadium in the Quilter Nations Series. Witness the likes of Maro Itoje, Marcus Smith and Tom Curry every weekend in November. Tickets are selling fast, with prices from £50 for adults and £15 for juniors. Visit englandrugby.com/tickets.
You never forget the dogs you've loved. They have the power to steal our hearts, to love us unconditionally, and be there for us when we need them most, without saying a word. You understand how a dog can change a life. A guide dog can transform the life of someone living with sight loss. Will you help change someone else's life with a gift in your will to guide dogs? Request our free will guide today. Search Guide Dogs Free Wills.
Guide Dogs.
After a magical visit to the Kingdom of Caring, there's been a spooky mashup in Happy Meal, and the Care Bears are all jumbled up. Join the Care Bears on their most spellbinding adventure yet. Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until 4th of November, from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last. Subject to availability, fair ordering policy applies.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Protect your small business and understand cybersecurity.
7.32, back to our conversation about that ceasefire. Its fragility being tested to the max. Katie, you'll be the next caller on that. Let's get into the world of business. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. I don't know who wrote your splash headline today, but I like what I see. The apple of my AI. What's the story behind that, Christian? Good morning.
Good morning. Credit to Simon Hunt, our City Editor.
Well done, Simon. Good stuff.
Cooked that up last night. We're talking about the valuation and the market position of the biggest tech companies in the world. Now, if there is a bubble in the AI sector, nobody's told Wall Street investors. Yesterday, Apple and Microsoft both surpassed a $4 trillion valuation, £3 trillion. And Microsoft had hit it before in the summer, but had pulled back a bit. Now they went through it again. Apple hit it last night as the US markets closed. Their shares in both reached record highs as AI excitement continues to grip investors. And Microsoft shares have climbed 28% this year. Apple's risen 15%. So they've added, Microsoft's added about $900 billion in value to itself and about half a trillion dollars for Apple.
I mean, just to put this in context, sorry to talk over you, Sport, but I've just quickly looked. The UK forecast for GDP is around $3.9 trillion. So this is bigger than UK's output, for God's sake.
These companies are absolutely flying. Now, to be fair, as analysts pointed out last night, you're talking about Microsoft and Apple in particular, and there are others that make up the so-called Magnificent Seven in the US tech market. But these two, you know, the company's products are essentially used by everybody all the time at work and at home. So to say nothing of the excitement and anticipation around AI and what that's going to do for these companies and for the US economy, they are two exceptionally high-performing consumer and business-facing brands. There has been talk about questions over some of these valuations. The US economy is basically now sustained by these seven giant tech firms that make up for about a third of the value of the US stock market. I think somebody pointed out the other day that were it not for AI levels of investment, the US economy basically wouldn't have grown this year. So they are pretty dependent on this, and it is, you know, fairly extraordinary valuations. And I have to say, over here in the UK, not to put too much of a downer on it, but most exciting thing going on in our stock market at the moment is a tinned food company is going to go public. And good luck to them. But we would kill for a little slice of some of this tech action, I'm sure.
Wouldn't we just? All right, to other news. If we're talking numbers, why is it a case of more Bodge the Builder than Bob the Builder? Christian.
The government, and you spoke to the housing secretary recently, the government is determined to stick to its target of building 1.5 million new homes over the course of this parliament. They say that's what they're going to do. People who actually have to build these homes say, no, you won't. The Times reports on its front page this morning that in a private letter to the OBR, which, as we know, is busy costing the government's public finances and likely budget room for manoeuvre, the industry, home building industry, wrote to the OBR and said, we're not going to meet this target. It's too ambitious and it's not going to happen. Now, this matters because in March, the OBR said that if the UK built 1.3 million homes by the end of this parliament, it would increase GDP by 0.2% and give Rachel Reeves, that is, about £7 billion of much-needed space. Now, are they going to recalculate off the back of the letter from the house builders who say, we're not going to hit this target? And there are lots of reasons why. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it build. The government has put lots of effort into its planning reform bills, etc. But at the same time, conditions are pretty difficult for home builders for a number of reasons. First of all, there are lots of new regulations and taxes. The regulations on, you know, the size and kind of windows you can have. In London in particular, the figures are particularly stark because post-Grenfell, there are a lot of regulations about number of staircases you need if your building's over a certain height. Lots of viability concerns, as the industry puts it, about once you tot up all the obligations around social housing and local infrastructure, levies and taxes, is it viable to build and sell these houses? Lots of people argue at the moment it's not, particularly in London. And then there's the wider issue of the economy. Are people in a house buying mood at the moment? And I would suggest probably not on the whole. So the government wants to build 1.5 million homes over the course of this parliament. The UK hasn't built more than 300,000 homes in a single year since 1977. And the state was full steam ahead on council house and social house building. So they say they're going to do it. The industry says you're not going to do it. Is it time to ditch the target? It's not just semantics, because the OBR is totting up what kind of economic benefit would come from the government hitting its target.
Let's move lastly to why is it more a case of Doctor No than Doctor Who?
It's been some time since I watched Doctor Who, Nick, but I keep an eye on some of the coverage and some of the debate. And on the business side, it's quite interesting because Disney signed a deal with the BBC, I think, back in 2022, and said they were going to put Doctor Who on steroids, take it around the world, turn it into a major global franchise, reach 150 countries. Now they said, actually, we're not interested. And they've ended that partnership with the BBC. Lots of people say that Doctor Who isn't quite what it used to be. Don't know about your childhood days and my childhood days, but
Tom Baker was my doctor, Christian. Who was yours?
Well, somebody a little more recent, if I can put it as delicately as that.
Go on.
But lots
who
of
was
lots
it?
Of David Tennant, I guess.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know, I mean, but I was never a mega fan. But look, there are lots of reasons why. Some people say that it's just lost its way. It's, you know, some people say it's gone a bit woke. Some people say it's just run out of steam. The BBC still say that it's magnificent and they're committed to a Christmas special next year or something. Lord. Anyway, but they're not, whatever happens to it, it's not going to be with the money and the firepower and the reach of Disney behind it, because they've said, no, it's not working for us.
All right. I'll let you go back to your TARDIS and get off to City AM. Christian May is its editor-in-chief. Thank you for that. 7:39, talk around the same time tomorrow. Talk now with Katie in Watford. I say again, this fragile, the fragility of the ceasefire being taken to the max. Katie, what do you say? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I think if you look about Hamas has effectively committed three ceasefire breaches. First of all, there is this returning of Mir organs from this poor family son who was actually reburied three times. That's not purely for the psychological torture of that family. That's also because by reburying that body, the Red Cross come in and provide them with bulldozers, as do other neighbouring states. And those bulldozers are going to be used for rearming and regrouping and building those tunnels again. If you look at Arabic media, they talk about a hadna, a temporary ceasefire, not really committing to a full ceasefire. Mm. Second of all, they have been, I actually was in Israel last week and saw with my own eyes from the Gaza envelope, there is sniper fire. They have been shooting despite a ceasefire against IDF positions.
So did you say you were there last week?
Yes, I was, near meters away, and you could see the smoke. They were shooting against IDF soldiers just nearly last week. It's not just today.
Right.
And the third breach is, of course, they're murdering their own people. I mean, they did this in 2006 when they took power. They were murdering, who they saw as opponents, viable opponents to take over. But also families. There was an example of a Hamas murdering a family, two children and the wife of a man who merely praised the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation for providing aid. Okay. Those are the kind of people they are. And murdering their own people, they're meant to disarm.
Katie, when you spoke to people in the area, what was their sense of the strength of the ceasefire?
I think there was a huge amount of hope. I spoke to Arab Israelis, Jewish Israelis, people in the area, a huge amount of hope that this might, with Donald Trump's and the other neighbouring countries' support, that this might really bring about peace. But I think there's also a real sense of, we've seen this before. The Hamas aren't, a good faith actors. And whilst they still are, they still control the area, they're murdering their opponents, and there is no viable alternative, and there aren't boots on the ground from perhaps, other Arabic states who are willing to disarm them, then will we just see what we see beforehand? Rockets, attacks, murdering their own people. Okay. So there's a lot of hope and real, these people just want to get on with their lives. Everyone, Arab Israelis, Jewish Israelis, just want to get on with their lives.
Katie, lastly, how much is Donald Trump seen as a hero over there currently?
I think absolutely he is. I think there's a huge support for him and real hope that this will, the 20-point plan will get to its end. But at the moment, we're on point one and it's failing.
It is indeed. Katie, thanks for all the input, particularly as you were there so recently. Do stay in touch. I'd like to hear more of your reports and what you pick up, but I have to move on. We'll come back to calls on this. Jonathan, you're on the next caller, but it's coming up on 7:42 and we must reflect as much of the news agenda or report as much of the news agenda as we can. Let's come home. And more than 40 economists, academics and policy experts joining forces to call on the Chancellor to do what? LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, has the exclusive report. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, this letter, as you say, has been seen exclusively by us here at LBC. It contains a string of names who are calling on the Chancellor again to end the two-child benefit cap at the budget. Now, of course, we hear a lot, don't we, day in, day out, about how it's going to help lift thousands of children out of poverty and is the right thing to do. This cap, as you know, introduced by the Conservatives, it limits the amount of benefits that any family can get to basically two children. So any more than two children and you don't get any more benefits for that. However, this group of people is saying it can have two huge economic benefits too. So Rachel Reeves, of course, under huge pressure to get that economic growth at this budget. I was told earlier this week that some of those forecasts around the economy, 20 billion, 30 billion, that black hole is the case. The Office for Budget Responsibility is giving her plenty of information this week about exactly how she can fill that. So what will boost growth and keep labour MPs happy? Well, it could be this, lifting the two-child benefit cap. There has long, as you know, been pressure on the Chancellor to do more. We know that the Prime Minister, we know that Bridget Phillipson, lots of top figures in the Labour Party want to do this. However, it's going to cost loads of money, Nick. It's going to cost around £4.5 billion a year to do it, which is, of course, a lot. However, the people we've been speaking to say that this can actually boost the economy too. The economist Jonathan Portes, he previously worked for the Department for Work and Pensions. He thinks we are an international outlier on this two-child benefit cap, and he says this will boost the economy too.
This policy is internationally, it's an outlier. No other country that we know of imposes a cap on benefits after two children. It's deeply damaging, not just to the kids and families who are affected, but to the broader social and economic fabric of our country. We would all be better off if child poverty was reduced.
We also spoke with Megan Meek-O'Connor. She is head of England and Westminster for Save the Children. She says that even the people working for the DWP's own Child Poverty Task Force think this is the right thing to do for the economy.
Child poverty costs us a lot as a country. It costs us in health, health costs. It means that children have sort of delayed educational achievements. It means that their capacity to earn as they get older is diminished. Child poverty is holding us back. So what we need to do is make this upfront investment now, and it will be a long-term boost to the economy as well as an improvement to children's lives. Immediately, it would bring 400,000 out of poverty and another 100,000 out of the very deepest poverty, so that's destitution.
Now, I was speaking to people in the Treasury this week. They stress there is no final decision on this. The government want an option that is not going to break the bank and will help children out of poverty. However, if this is going to grow the economy, that is absolutely on Rachel Reeves' number one list. People I was speaking to saying the only thing that Rachel Reeves wants to do with this budget, apart from obviously fill that economic black hole, is grow the economy. The Treasury are absolutely throwing the book at it. So if there's something is that they can prove that this is actually going to grow the economy and to help us out too and make all of us better off, then the Chancellor is definitely going to be considering it, I am told. The government say in an official response they're still working on their Child Poverty Task Force, and they say they are already investing £500 million in children's early development, making sure the poorest do not go hungry in the holidays.
Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, reporting. Coming up after the news, arrests of migrants working illegally hit a record high. We'll get more details from the government on that. And here's a question. How do you make a laugh funny?
Please don't alarm yourself. It's only my wife laughing.
Good Lord!
Well, that comic genius, Prunella Scales, showed how, and we'll have an appreciation of her career in the next hour. It's just on 7:46, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Hurricane Melissa has arrived in Cuba after leaving a disaster zone in Jamaica. The migrant sex offender Hadish Kabatu's arrived back in Ethiopia after being deported, and dozens of people are reported dead after a series of Israeli strikes in Gaza. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most, strong winds further north, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the Essex stretch of the M25, anti-clockwise to junction 28 at the A12. It's after a car was on fire. There's now only one lane open, and it's slow from junction 30 at the A13. Clockwise is open, but slow from the M11 because of onlookers. The M20 is very busy this morning, westbound from junction 7 at Detling Hill to junction 4 at Leybourne after a car broke down and the overnight works finished late. Also busy on the M11 southbound to junction 5 at Loughton, that's after an accident. And in Peckham, the A2 Old Kent Road remains closed in both directions. Those investigation works are still taking place.
LBC.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. Stayshore is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So Stayshore with Stayshore Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at stayshore.co.uk/reviews.
The £5 meal deal from McDonald's. Get a cheeseburger or mayo chicken, medium fries, four McNuggets and a medium soft drink for guess what? That's right, £5. It's not called the £5 meal deal for nothing. From 11 a.m. Not available on delivery. Carbonated soft drink upgrade fees apply. Participating restaurants subject to availability.
Do you know your state pension age? No. Maybe you're not sure. Or you don't know how to check. It's so quick and easy to check online. All you need is your date of birth. Knowing your state pension age helps you think about your future. So check yours today. Search state pension age on gov.uk and simply enter your date of birth. State pension age. It's good to know.
Trains at Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie.
Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough.
Shooting star! Oh, wow!
Made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
It's 11 minutes before 8. We'll come back to our conversation about pushing the fragility of that Middle East ceasefire to the max in events overnight. But let's come to matters here in the UK. And arrests of migrants working illegally in the country have hit their highest level since records began over the last year, after the government cracks down with enforcement visits focusing on takeaway shops, fast food drivers, beauty salons and car washes. Let's get more from Labour MP and Minister for Border Security and Asylum, Alex Norris, who joins us now. Minister, this is obviously good news, but is it because of the high number of people here already, or is it because of more efficient policing tactics? Which would you say it is, Minister? Good morning.
Morning, Nick, and thanks for having me. It's because of a significant increase in activity. You know, we've done the most raids that we've ever done since records began. The reality is, people think, and have thought for a long time, that Britain's a country you can come to and melt into the illegal economy and work. And we think that's wrong, and we're changing that, which is why we've done the activity and the levels that we've done, and we're really pleased that it's got results.
What sort of numbers are we talking about? Can you give my listeners an impression?
Yeah, so it's 11,000 raids. They've led to 8,000 arrests, and so far they've led to 1,000 people being deported from this country.
And are there more to come?
Well, we want, you know, anyone who commits crime, we want for them to be removed. You know, there may well be some cases, as there are working through the system. I can't say that all of those people will be removed. There are legal barriers at the moment which we're looking to reform through the sentencing bill, depending on the nature of the punishment that the individual gets. We're seeking to change that. Similarly, you know, we get fought every inch of the way in court. We need to push that harder as a government, and that's what we're doing. So, you know, we want to see people who commit crimes in this country removed from this country.
Well, you talk about people who commit crimes. Of course, front page news today, an Afghan man who arrived in the UK in a lorry has been arrested on suspicion of murdering a dog. Admittedly, he came here under the previous government's watch, but this is another potential instance, an incident or instance of this, isn't it, Minister?
Well, first of all, this is a dreadful case, and, you know, our feelings are with the people of Uxbridge. We're still, of course, working through precisely what's happened and the motivation and the intent there. You know, I do want to clarify some disinformation, Nick, that is going around. This wasn't an individual housed in a hotel. This wasn't an individual with a live asylum claim. We normally don't go that far, as you know, but I think it's important for public confidence to say that. This individual must feel the full weight of the law, and when people do commit crimes in this country, we are resolute in deporting them.
Grateful for your clarification on that, Minister. Thank you. A word, if you would, on Hadesh Kabatu. It's reported now he has been deported. Minister?
Yeah, I can confirm to you and to your listeners, Nick, that he has now been deported. You know, Hadesh Kabatu is a convicted sex offender. Our streets are safer without him. He had no place in this country and has been removed overnight.
How's the one-in, one-out deal going, Minister?
Well, this is a pilot. It's designed to deter people from making that dangerous crossing. You know, we're scaling it up. It is, you know, it is working in the way that we intended it to do in terms of that scale up. It is part, it's not the sole answer, but it's part of making that very strong and very obvious point to those people who come to this country illegally. You know, we've removed 35,000 people since we came to office. Do not try to come here via clandestine means, because we will be seeking to remove you.
Right. But how many have gone out on the one-in, one-out deal, Minister?
51 have gone out on that deal.
And how many have come in?
26 so
far. Okay. And this has been running for months, and you call that a success?
This is a pilot. This has always been, you know, it's a unique agreement, the likes of which that people all around the world are looking at. It was always
designed.
Well,
I wonder if they're looking favourably. Are they looking at derision or favourably, Minister?
Well, this, as I say, this is something that not been done before. The whole, you know, the goal this is in service of, Nick, is to make very clear to those folks who want to cross the channel to not do so, to deter that journey. It's not good for them, it's not good for us. You know, this isn't going to be the sole answer to that. That's why we've done what we've done with the raids. We're sending a clear signal to people, do not come and think you can live in a hotel and work illegally, because we're not going to tolerate that.
Okay. It's interesting because both the current and former Home Secretary and the Prime Minister and you, Minister, have called it a pilot. How long will the pilot run? What is it you're looking for? How will it be deemed a success?
Well, you know, I don't want to give a closed end on it because we want to get see the fullest to which it can operate. The point on pilot is that you build up. You know, this is a new and novel arrangement. As I say, there's virtually no kind of comparison. You know, all.
But will we still be in the pilot stage at the year, end of the year, Minister?
I think we'd still be in that stage at that point. We are building it up. You know, we need to make sure that it's, you know, that it's resolute. You want to know that it's having its impact as well, that it is having that deterrent effect. So I know people want to see quick action. That's why we made the removals of 35,000 people who had no right to be here. This is a component of that. Of course, we want to do more of it as well. But it's right that we get it right and make sure that it works.
Right. So it could still be in the pilot stage in the new year.
I wouldn't want to put a date on it, Nick.
All right. Couple of other matters while I have the benefit of you on the line. Plans to house migrants in two army barracks could be delayed due to major safety work. This was something I was discussing with one of your colleagues yesterday. I know it is the plan, but the plan now has to be delayed, Minister?
I wouldn't commit to that at this point. We're intending to have people on site by the end of November. You know, we need to make sure the sites are safe, both on site and for the immediate community, and that's what we'll be doing. But, let's remember the goal that we're in service of here. We inherited this situation where hotels up and down this country are being used to this purpose, all the economic impact that has, all the impact that has on the community. We are going to close every single one of those hotels. We're going to reduce those numbers. That's why we've made the deportations that we've made. That's why we've got the returns agreement to deter those crossings. But in the meantime, we're going to use better accommodation than hotels, in this case military sites. We want them operational as soon as possible.
Lastly, can you comment on a story? House builders have been warned the government's budget watchdog you will not hit the target of 1.5 million homes by the end of the decade, by the end of the lifetime of this parliament. Can you comment on that, Minister?
Yeah, we've made that commitment and we're going to deliver on it. You know, I'm sad to see that story. The reality is we inherited a broken house building system. You know, the lack of targets basically meant that the market grounds were halt. Of course, that's taking time to ramp up. However, whether it's through the plan, it changes to the planning framework, whether it's the planning and infrastructure bill that's working its way through Parliament, we're making changes to make it, you know, better to build those communities in this country. So we're committed to it. It's crucial to this country. So, you know, we're going for it.
But Minister, lastly, I don't expect you to know the numbers. I think it comes in at about 180,000 built so far. Our city commentator, Christian May, was telling us that the last time a government hit 300,000 a year, which is what you'd know, was in 1977. What makes you think you can go back to those halcyon days, Minister?
Well, first of all, we need those houses. We need those communities.
Yeah, how are you actually going to get the bricks and the spades in the ground and bricks on the walls?
But we were clear with the British people from the start. It wouldn't be an even distribution from year one because the baseline from which we're building was so weak. That's why we've made the changes that we've made. As I say, whether it's the planning framework, whether it's the planning and infrastructure bill that's still working its way through Parliament, again, frustrated by the opposition because they don't want us to succeed. But those are the foundations, if you excuse a dreadful and inadvertent pun, Nick, of that approach. You need those things in place, you know, and so that's why we've taken that approach. It will scale up over the Parliament, and that's what will deliver.
Grateful for your time. Arrests of migrants working illegally hit a record high, as explained by Alex Norris, Minister for Border Security and Asylum. Thank you for your time. It's 3:08. William is in Harrow to come back to the conversation we started the hour with, which is this ceasefire. Your reaction to the overnight news. William, good morning.
Well, yes, I am greatly saddened by this breakdown in this ceasefire.
I think we all are, sir.
Now, I know the savagery and brutality of Hamas knows no bounds. Shooting people in the street is terrible. But Israel don't want this war to end. We have the...
Why do you say that?
Because they want to clear out this Gaza Strip and the West Bank. There's not a word about the West Bank. How many people were knocked out of their homes yesterday in the West Bank? Do we know?
I don't have those figures to hand. Why would that be brought into the conversation? Why is that important to you?
Because Israel and America, I put them in along with it, are trying to clear the Palestinians out of that area. They wanted to take the place over.
But if they have this council or panel or whatever you want to call it that would determine Gaza's future, on which Palestinians will sit alongside Tony Blair, they're not going to agree to that, though. It won't get off the ground, William, will it?
I doubt it, but look at the chairman of it. Mr. Trump himself,
yes.
Self-appointed chairman, and he's supplying Netanyahu with bombs and aeroplanes and drones to slaughter Palestinian people.
William, thank you for your take on that. Of course, Israel would say that it's because Hamas are not responding. That's why they're doing it. But I'm grateful. Let's go a minute late to the news and take a call on what we just heard about the figures regarding the number of people being rounded up. Barry's in Hailsham. What comfort did you take from what you've just heard from the minister? Good morning.
Very good morning to you, Nick. None whatsoever. I've been hearing that, and I'm sure you have as well, by the way, but I think they need challenging on it. This 35,000 number that they quote as a successful amount of people that they've deported since they came to power, that number, 35,000, it hasn't changed, Nick, in about 6 to 8 months, I think.
Oh, that's a good point.
Quoting that number when she was Home Secretary. Unfortunately, the British people are picking...
That will allow that, but we must be careful because there's a case that could go before the courts, but come back. So, and how else does that anger show itself, lastly, Barry?
How does it show itself? Well, you can see it online, Nick. You can see you can see the anger online, but this online safety bill, I think, will end up eventually suppressing that, the digital ID. Unfortunately, the British people are picking up the tab for these incidents in more ways than one.
Barry, grateful for your input. The music means we have to move on. Have yourself a safe day. And coming up after the news, you say there's anger there. There's also anger from the government, as one council says it's going to move to a four-day week. Speaking to LBC back in July, Bridget Smith, leader of South Cambridgeshire District Council, said...
The experience has been really positive. The reason that we embarked on it was that we were really struggling to recruit and retain the staff that we needed.
Well, evidence obtained by one newspaper, the Daily Telegraph, indicates otherwise. We'll give you full details on that. Plus, London's grooming gang Shane, children's care campaigner, will speak with me and give us details on that. And as of today, the morning after pill is now available for free in England. We'll look at the impact of that. Those stories and more follow the 8 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Hurricane Melissa has made landfall in Cuba after hitting Jamaica with winds of 185 miles per hour. Hundreds of thousands of people are without power and communications as a result of catastrophic winds and flash flooding. Ministers in Kingston say they are expecting some loss of life. Jovan Johnson is a reporter based in the Jamaican capital.
We're talking about over 530,000 Jamaicans without power. We have 15,000 people in shelters, and we still yet don't have a handle on the scale of the impact of Hurricane Melissa. The authorities, the Prime Minister expected to lead a tour by helicopter tomorrow just to get a sense of how widespread the damage is.
The Foreign Office says it's supporting the thousands of British nationals stranded in Jamaica. The migrant sex offender Hadish Kabatu's arrived back in Ethiopia after being deported from the UK. He'd been serving a 12-month sentence for sexual assault in Epping, but was released from prison by mistake last Friday. The Border Security Minister, Alex Norris, has just been speaking to Nick.
I can confirm to you and to your listeners, Nick, that he has now been deported. You know, Hadish Kabatu is a convicted sex offender. Our streets are safer without him. He had no place in this country, has been removed overnight.
Dozens of people are reported to have been killed in Israeli strikes in Gaza. The attacks were ordered after Israel accused Hamas of killing an IDF soldier and staging the recovery of a deceased hostage. Hamas has rejected the claims and says it will now delay handing over the body of another captive. More than 40 economists and policy experts have urged Rachel Reeves to scrap the two-child benefit cap. A letter seen by LBC says it's become the largest driver of rising child poverty and must be overturned in full at the budget. It could cost £4.5 billion to do so in full. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark has more details.
This group of people are joining together saying that it can have huge economic benefits too. And of course, we know that Rachel Reeves is under desperate pressure to try and produce some of that growth at the budget. The Treasury is said to be considering a number of options. However, of course, it's going to depend on the state of the public finances and how much money the government has to spend.
And Fulham needed penalties to get past League One Wickham and reach the quarterfinals of the League Cup. Brentford thrashed fourth-tier Grimsby 5-0. Cardiff secured a 2-1 victory at Wrexham last night. In the city, the FTSE 100 is just reopening at 96.96. It closed up 42 yesterday. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 13. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for many places. Strong winds and occasionally heavy rain further north. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
It's that time of year again.
which can only mean one thing. Save a third off roasting joints at Waitrose. Choose from tender beef silverside, succulent whole brined and seasoned chicken, or juicy beach smoked gammon. So, fire up your ovens and give winter a warm welcome with a third off roasting joints. Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines and stores subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands, Little Waitrose and Partners and Concessions. Offer ends 11th of November.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 4 minutes after eight on Wednesday, October the 29th, coming up in this hour. For heaven's sake, the local authority that's moving to a four-day week, despite opposition from the government, and it's thought it could catch on. We'll give you more details on that. Also in the hour...
An Afghan national who came to the UK by lorry has been arrested after three people were stabbed in West London on Monday. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma in Uxbridge with the details.
When it comes to house building, defiance from the minister within the last 15, 20 minutes or so, they are going to hit the target. But as explained, our financial commentator, editor-in-chief of City AM, Christian May, said...
The UK hasn't built more than 300,000 homes in a single year since 1977. And that was in the sort of the state was full steam ahead on council house and social house building. So they say they're going to do it. The industry says you're not going to do it.
Plus, farewell, Mrs. Faulty.
You could have had them both done by now if you hadn't spent the whole morning skulking in there listening to that racket.
The racket? Brahms! Third racket!
Fantastic. Prunella Scales dies, age 93. We'll be speaking to her close friend, Joan, or now Dame Joan Bakewell.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Question. The last time you had to contact your local authority... How efficient and how easy was the process? Whether it was the last time I had to contact was get one of those brown bins you need for garden waste. You might not be brown in your particular part of the world, but anyway, it's brown in our particular part of the world. But you've had to contact, it might be something else. It might be trying to get a car park pass. It might be about the fact that your bins haven't been cleared away. It might be something else, holes in the pavement, I don't know. How efficient was the service that you got? Well, now the government is calling into question the decision, for heaven's sake, for one council to go to a four-day week. You're going to hear from the council leader in just a moment. Labour launching a crackdown, says the Daily Telegraph, on the four-day working week by rebuking the first council to have adopted it. Community Secretary Steve Reid, you may recall we were speaking with him earlier this week about other matters, has written to the leader of South Cambridgeshire District Council expressing, quote, deep disappointment. It's a Liberal Democrat council. It became the first to adopt permanently four-day week this summer, giving bin collectors and social housing officials 100% of their pay for around 80% of their contracted hours. Another 25 councils are said to be considering the move. Enough from me. Let's get straight to South Cambridgeshire District Council, representing areas such as North Stow, Linton, Camborne. I know that sounds like Alan Partridge, but just if you live any of those towns and villages, you can tell me how efficient it will be. But let's welcome Councillor Bridget Smith. Thank you for coming on, Councillor. What has this done for council efficiency? Good morning.
Good morning. So with a four-day working week, I just say we are open 5 days a week, and a lot of our services are available 24/7. Our emergency services, we work 32-hour week. It's taken us from being a good council to being an outstanding council because our staff are highly motivated. They are working much, much smarter. We've seen improvements across the board. We've saved nearly £400,000 a year because we're not paying expensive agency staff. We're working very closely with government thanks to our award-winning planning service, and you know, we're delivering on the government's growth agenda.
To play some of your own words, they're working much, much smarter. Yes. In what way? Which is an interesting construction. In what way?
So it's quite technical, but it's working at a level of intensity that actually is not sustainable over a traditional five days, because people would just burn out very, very quickly, and a two-day weekend doesn't give enough time to recover from
that. Well, how are all the other authorities in the country managing then, Councillor, if they burn out so quickly over 4 days?
So the other councils in the country aren't managing well at all. And, you know, I think we are probably the only council in the country that doesn't have a chronic recruitment and retention problem, which is why we embarked on this in the first place.
I'm not surprised. You've got a four-day week. But I'm more worried about the people you're there to help, those in Camborne and Northstow. I wonder what they would say.
Well, actually, I think they would say we, you know, we are running extremely good service. So, you know, we connect 99.9% of the bins on time. We have given more planning approvals. We are building more houses in South Cambridgeshire as a percentage than anywhere else in the country.
I'm going to quote to you the letter that I understand you've been in receipt from the Community Secretary, Steve Reid.
Yes.
He writes, "The independent report shows that performance declined in key housing-related services, including rent collection, re-letting times and tenant satisfaction with repairs, especially where vulnerable residents may be affected." Is he making that up?
So I've also shared with you the letter that I've sent straight off to him in reply to that. So we are still in the top 25% for performance. So council rent collection went down because of the cost of living crisis, not surprisingly, because people living in council houses...
Wouldn't it perhaps come back up if you work 5 days a week?
No, of course they wouldn't. So the national average rent arrears is 2.73 and ours is 1.65. So actually, those things were due to other factors outside of the four-day week. And actually, I can argue that they would have been far more seriously impacted if we hadn't been working a four-day week and had staff who were highly motivated, very, very committed, and actually, working far more intensely and smartly than is possible in areas working with a five-day week.
But repairs aren't being done sufficiently quickly, the Environment Secretary.
So the repairs is an outsourced service to a company who works 5 days a week. So you can't blame that on the four-day week.
Well, but they are ultimately responsible to the local authority of which you're the leader.
Absolutely, and so, we've been working very closely.
The Community Secretary is right. Repairs are not being done.
That's not true. That is not true. The Secretary of State is incorrect, and I'm really hoping that I get to meet with him to allay some of his concerns and deal with some of these misapprehensions.
Well, let's quote another bit of the letter, Councillor, and I'm grateful for your time on this. He writes, "If social housing is being built by this government and your team are unable to move residents into them so that they are standing empty, then I must reiterate my deep disappointment with your conduct." Is that true? Are houses standing empty, Councillor?
No, they are not. So, again, the time it takes to turn around council housing stock when it's vacated, we are in the top 25% performance. What we did was we gave ourselves a rather over-ambitious target of turning it around in just 2 weeks. But actually, council housing is now regularly coming back to us in a far poorer state than it was some years ago. And, we're still turning it round quickly than 75% of other councils. So they are not standing empty.
Lastly, Councillor, you keep citing that your council is in the top 25%, but earlier in our conversation, I asked how local authorities manage to get by who do five-day weeks, and you're saying that their performance is very bad as a result of that. So you're only doing well in a very bad set of figures. This is the reality, isn't it?
So the reports are all available on our website. It has shown that of all the things we measured, and this was a data-led study, actually we saw improvement in the majority of cases.
I'm sure Mr. Reid's letter is data-led as well. I'm sure he's not made it up.
Well, that's why I have written back to him and, to explain the situation to him. And I look forward to meeting with him very much. And what I hope is that, the government, I fail to understand why they're focusing on a little but very high-performing council. The government needs to focus on governing the country and actually leave me to do my job of running one of the highest-performing councils in the country.
Really grateful that you took the call this morning. Thank you, Councillor Bridget Smith, your leader of the South Cambridgeshire District Council, which is in the eye of the government storm. Listening to that, Trevor Kavanagh, who's former political editor at The Sun. Journalist joins me now. Trevor, four-day week across local authorities. Your reaction? Morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Nick. If it's so good as Councillor Smith suggests, why don't we go to a three-day week? I mean, the laws of normal human behaviour is that people revert to the norm, which is they do roughly the same amount that they always do per day. And they might tick up a little with the extra money because, after all, this is a 20% pay rise for doing the same job. And also, I assume the pension rates will be exactly the same in the future. But it's all very well for Councillor Smith to cite all these figures and statistics, but a survey of the residents in South Cambridgeshire takes a very different view. They think that at least 13 services out of 13 services, 9 have become worse under the scheme, 4 stay the same, and none improve. So it's a choice of figures, isn't it? And I think the people on the receiving end of this service, if it's a service, feel differently to the council delivering it.
Another point made in the Daily Telegraph today is the sincerity with which Labour might be pursuing this particular local authority, given the new workers' rights legislation that's coming our way.
Absolutely, and I must admit the story itself, when I saw it in the Telegraph, came as a shock, because it suddenly appeared that the government's decided that it should be grown up and governed properly like grown-ups, as it promised. And it hasn't done it for the first 16 months of its period in power. So I very much doubt if this is going to be spread nationwide. I don't think that there's any chance of the four-day week or working from home being eliminated. And I think that every council taxpayer in the country is feeling that they're paying too much for too little.
Always good speaking to you, Trevor Cavan, a former political editor at The Sun, and now over to you, your local authority. If you happen to have South Cambridgeshire, I would love to hear your reaction if you're listening in North Stow, Camborne or Linton, to use a sort of Alan Partridge line again, but I would. But in all other authorities, there are 25 councils monitoring how South Cambridgeshire goes. What bang for the buck do you get from your local authority? That's after the news. Also after the headlines.
An Afghan national who came to the UK by lorry has been arrested after 3 people were stabbed in West London on Monday. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma in Uxbridge with the details.
You're listening to LBC. The 8:15 headlines are next. Thomas Watts.
Hurricane Melissa has arrived in Cuba after hitting Jamaica with winds of 185 miles per hour. The migrant sex offender, who was released from prison by mistake, has now arrived in Ethiopia, and dozens of Palestinians have reportedly been killed in Israeli strikes in Gaza. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for many places, some strong winds and heavy rain further north, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 30 at the A13 to 28 at the A12. It was after a car was on fire earlier. All the lanes are open now, but it's still very slow. More problems on the M20 westbound. There's been an accident at junction 5 at Aylesford. It was already very slow on that stretch, but now it's even busier because of another accident. In Peckham, the Old Kent Road, the A2 remains closed both ways because of the ongoing investigation, and there are delays on the A10 Kingsland High Street both ways because of an ongoing police investigation that's happened outside Dalston Kingsland Station. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo line and severe delays on the Elizabeth line at Whitechapel.
This is LBC.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
You know how fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because sound is the most effective way to tell the players they're rubbish. Works in advertising too. Because when you amplify your advertising using radio, your campaign is 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Big, big, big motoring world. Wow, wow, wow motoring world.
Yes, that's right. Big Motoring World is also Wow Motoring World, because we price check our cars every day to guarantee you our best price, with up to 95% of them below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on what matters to you. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT, protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
18 minutes after 8, I've just looked up how much I pay in council tax, having had that conversation with Trevor Kavanagh. It's a fortune, because you pay it, you don't notice it, do you? It goes out every month, you don't realise. Well, But then when you time that figure by 12, you suddenly realise how much you're paying. Is it really that much to ask that they all come in 5 days a week? Now, you've just heard from the council leader, and I'm very grateful that she came to the phone and defended her council's position, and she said how happy the staff are. Well, I'm sure they are. If you turn around in virtually every workplace and said, I tell you what we're going to do, you're going to get 100% of your pay for 80% of your time. Now, I know many of you, and we had this conversation so many times in the light of the pandemic, and you all shout and scream at the, we can all work effectively from home. I can. I'm a computer programmer. I'm a designer. I'm an engineer, whatever it might be. Yeah, I see that. I get that. But the reality is, if you're running a local authority, and again, the council leader has just told us that all the services are there, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, whatever it might be, is it really that much to expect that they come in every single day? Now, I say again, there's not one sort of huge city or town in South Cambridge, because I've just had a look at its footprint, as it were. But if you are one of its residents, or indeed Cambridgeshire generally, because, as you cite the figures, research referenced in the letter from a very angry Environment Secretary, Steve Reid, referenced research done by the Universities of Salford, Bradford and Cambridge, and it looked at the effect. It found 21 of the 24 services improved or stayed the same, but survey of residents, as Trevor was saying, looking at 13 services, found 9 became worse under the scheme, 4 stayed the same, and none improved during the trial. So I would argue, despite what the council leader told us, despite what some of these researchers from those universities have discovered, the reality, what is that expression, the proof of the pudding is in the eating or something? The reality is, if you're there, and are your bins being cleared away? Are the holes in the road being repaired? Are you, if you're in social housing there, are there, to quote this letter, houses, quote, standing empty, unable to move residents into them? Is that the reality? We'll take your calls on that in just a moment, but there's a major story we have to get to, which we have mentioned a couple of times, and you've heard on the news bulletins as well, this concerning an Afghan national arrested after a dog walker was killed in a triple stabbing. Details now from LBC's Shivani Sharma, who joins us from the scene, Uxbridge in West London. Shivani, morning.
Nick, good morning. Two police cars are parked up here at Midhurst Gardens this morning. A house has been cordoned off in this residential area in West London because on Monday afternoon, Uxbridge became the centre of a tragic crime scene. Police were called here at 5 p.m. after 3 people were stabbed fatally in the case of the 49-year-old Wayne Broadhurst. He was walking his dog and he tried to intervene to protect a 45-year-old man who now has life-changing injuries and a 14-year-old boy who was also injured. Now, Paul O'Brien lives in this area and he's told LBC he was walking home from the shops on Monday when he witnessed some of what happened.
I see two guys come running out of Midhurst Gardens very fast, looking kind of scared, run past me. Then I could hear a distant background noise of police, like an ambulance. You know, you just get that eerie, they're everywhere. And then two cars, a marked police car and an unmarked police car, come down very fast, went straight into the Midhurst. And then I could hear them shouting, "Armed police, drop your weapon." And the guy wasn't cooperating. He had his hands up, but he was holding a knife in his right hand, quite a big knife. And the police must have said 4 or 5 times, "We will fire if you don't drop the weapon." And he didn't comply at all. So they tasered him. He dropped down.
Now, a 22-year-old Afghan national was arrested at the scene for murder and attempted murder. It's been revealed that he came to the UK in a lorry in 2020. He was granted asylum and leave to remain 2 years later. Now, the police say they're currently trying to establish a relationship between him and the victims. It's not being treated as terrorism. And the Minister for Border Security and Asylum, Alex Norris, told you this morning he wants to clear up misinformation about where the suspect had been living.
First of all, this is a dreadful case, and you know, our feelings are with the people of Uxbridge. We're still, of course, working through precisely what's happened and the motivation and the intent there. You know, I do want to clarify some disinformation, Nick, that is going around. This wasn't an individual housed in a hotel. This wasn't an individual with a live asylum claim. We normally don't go that far, as you know, but I think it's important for public confidence to say that. This individual must feel the full weight of the law, and when people do commit crimes in this country, we are resolute in deporting them.
Now, Nick, one neighbour's just told me the 14-year-old victim came knocking on his door, desperately asking for help on Monday. Locals here in Uxbridge telling LBC they are completely shaken by what's happened.
My wife was in tears last night. And, you know, I've got a 2-year-old son. I'm worried for the future of him. Why can't we all just live together in a peaceful environment? You know, I don't care whether you're black, white, you know, gay, straight. I don't care. As long as you're a nice person, I'll talk to anyone. And it's just shocking that people can't live like that.
We saw all these police cars. Me and my family was just really confused what was happening. I lived in my whole life. It's honestly never happens around here. My mum's going to be more worried about me. She's telling me to be more cautious.
It's 5 o'clock on a Monday. Kids are walking around here, as you probably see. They're going around on their bikes. You know, what has it come to when at 5 o'clock on a Monday afternoon there's a triple stabbing?
I have seen the victim a few times going, very friendly guy, spoke to him a few times, he goes out with his dog, etc. But now we are seeing lots of strangers coming here, 6 months, 3 months, they come here, live, they do whatever they want, then they go away. Any minor crimes, we call the police, they don't come.
Chief Superintendent Jill Horsfall has called this a shocking and senseless act of violence. She says multiple officers will be in the local area throughout the week to provide reassurance while detectives work intensely to try and piece together the circumstances.
LBC Shivani Sharma reporting. 8:24 is the time. Let's break some of the reaction to this idea of a 4-day week. My thanks to Nick. Apparently I should have calculated my council tax. I make 10 payments instead of 12, so it's still a heck of a lot of money, but not quite as bad as I thought it was, so thank you for pointing that out, Nick. Fraser says, do you want it to be like the US? Do you want a 7-day week or the United States where they only get 2 weeks holiday? No, but I think if the council tax is charged at 100%, they're getting 80% of the time, Fraser. I don't see that's fair. And by the way, it's only 2 weeks when you first start. That does improve after you start to put in years of service. Same subject. This comes in from George, we should get a 20% cut on council tax if people are only going to be there 80% of the time. And one last one. This is Alan in Thurston, which is near Cambridgeshire. If they can do their jobs in 4 days, they obviously have too many staff. Cut the staff numbers by 20%, the council tax by 20%. Thank you for that. Oh, Alan, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I've just read that and you've just phoned in to make those points as well. How satisfied are you with your local authority, Alan?
Well, to be honest, the local authority that covers my area do give a good service, in fairness. But as I said in the text, if they can do it with 20% less staff, then they should
cut all of our council. I mean, the reality is that the council leader kept pointing to various measures in which the staff are happy and people are happy, but a survey of residents, and I've mentioned this number again, looking at 13 services, found 9 had declined under this scheme.
Well, it's straight maths, isn't it, really? If you have less people or working less hours, then you get less productivity. It's not rocket science, is it, let's be honest.
I like your idea that they should cut the council tax accordingly. Alan, thank you for that. John in Carshalton. John, you've got another solution or an idea, I'm told. What is it? Good morning.
Yes, I'd say that what it means is that they're 20% overstaffed.
Indeed, which is what Alan was just saying, yeah.
That's my take on it, and there has to be some sort of fairness in society. I've not got a problem. I'm fairly well off. I'm middle class.
Okay.
You take a bus going to Heathrow at 6 o'clock in the morning. There's people there who got up at 5:15. They may be taking 1-2 buses to work.
Right.
They're going to maybe get home at 6:30 in the evening, whatever. And they hear that people are going to have a 4-day week while they pay for it. I find that just so unfair, and that there's a different reality in areas of the public sector than there is in most people's lives.
I think that's a tremendous point, and I wish I'd put it to the leader, but I think she would have said, but John, the people are happy here, the services are working, my staff are happy, they're giving a good service, it's there 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, is how I sense she would have responded, John.
Yes, I would have responded with the same thing, that they're living in a different world. They can chop 20% of their staff and they can cut their bills.
Yeah, you're right. I think the point you make about people having to go to work, now the clocks have gone back, or in the dark, 2 different buses, knowing that the staff are enjoying a 4-day week. John, excellent point you make. Thank you for that. Have yourself a good day. Let's come to the social media and the texts again. Suki says, the politics of envy is so obvious. How dare average or poorly paid people I don't know that many civil servants are poorly paid or local authority, but I'll read on. Get a break and something that makes them happier in work. How many days do you work, Nick, for your generous salary? Seven. 7 days a week. Genuinely, I work 7 days a week. Because if I'm not here, then I'm on the television and I'm writing a newspaper column. But I wouldn't have it any other way. That's the way I like it. And I'm not, as John just said, I'm not one of those poor, unfortunate people who has to get a series of buses to go to work, perhaps at Heathrow Airport, in the dark, for very little money, and they get a series of buses to get home, again, in the dark. Meanwhile, I admit Heathrow is not on that local authority patch in South Cambridgeshire. Meanwhile, get a job there, and you get 100% of your pay for 80% of your work. And, as was pointed out, your pension contributions stay the same. Now, one of the government's furious, but, of course, the new workers' rights legislation that the government is introducing will make it easier for staff to request the right to work from home from the minute they enter the workplace. From day one, they can say to the boss, by the way, I'd like to work from home a bit more. That workers' rights legislation is going to be an absolute disaster in some areas. We'll look more at that. Coming up after the news, more details on what's called London's grooming gang shame. Now, you may recall, and I think we played this earlier this week, this was addressed in part by London Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan, speaking in January.
The situation in London in relation to young people being groomed is different to other parts of the country. So what we have in London is young people being groomed, use your words, not mine, to be using county lines.
Use your words, not mine. He was addressing another politician, by the way. Why can't he say the word groomed? Now, the Met, of course, is reviewing 9,000 cases in this probe, and we'll speak with a campaigner after the news who can give us more details on that. Also after the news, we will have the full appreciation of...
What are you looking at me like that for?
Basil, there's a kipper sticking out of your jacket.
How can you make the line, there's a kipper sticking out of your jacket, so funny? She did. Prunella Scales. We'll have more after this. 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, LBC. News time, Thomas Watts.
Hurricane Melissa has reached Cuba after leaving what officials have called a disaster zone in Jamaica. Officials have warned of devastating impacts, with hundreds of thousands of people without power and communications. Migrant sex offender Hadish Kabatu's arrived back in Ethiopia after being deported. He was released from HMP Chelmsford by mistake last Friday. A government minister has recommitted to a target to build 1.5 million homes in England by the next election. Alex Norris has told Nick they will be delivered, despite warnings from house builders that the pledge is in jeopardy. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for many places, strong winds and occasionally heavy rain further north, a high of 14 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
On the orders of Donald Trump, four more boats have been struck off the coast of Venezuela, 14 more people dead. It's apparently about a war on drugs. Or is Donald Trump trying to overthrow the president of Venezuela itself?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
You plan a holiday? You plan a commute. Meal plans, career plans, even workouts need a plan. So doesn't it stand to reason that your money has one too? Because the sad truth is, if it doesn't, it's just sitting there, barely growing, if at all. That's why you need a money plan. And Quilter can help. It's a lot easier to stick to than a workout plan. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at Quilter.com.
Get that Euro Millions feeling this Friday. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots, 10 more Lumbos, 10 more salsas. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires this Friday.
Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
Councils told to end four-day weeks is the front-page headline, and we'll take more of your reaction to that in a moment. 8:33, that's today's headlines. Headlines earlier in the week, London could be the last great grooming scandal to be revealed. Of course, this has happened in a lot of northern towns and some Midlands towns and cities and some Midlands towns and cities as well. So is London the biggest one and about to break? Well, you'll hear from a campaigner in that area in just a moment. But let's go back to January. An exchange between the Conservative leader on the London Assembly, Susan Hall, and the Mayor of London, Sir Sadiq Khan, in which I think it's fair to say he appeared to downplay even the existence of grooming gangs in London.
Just how many grooming gangs have we got in London?
So the situation in London in relation to young people being groomed is different to other parts of the country. So what we have in London is young people being groomed, use your words, not mine, to be using county lines.
Grooming gangs that I would call rape gangs. Tell me about them. How many of those have we got? Not country lines.
We know in London there are issues about exploitation of young people. But they're not as defined by the member in her definition of what those types of gangs are.
Well, that was the mayor in January. Yesterday, LBC's reporter Joseph Draper asked Sir Sadiq for his response to those who say there is a cover-up going on.
I think the issue of child sexual exploitation is one of the most serious issues there is in society. And we take it incredibly seriously in London. I've been quite clear, as long as I've been mayor, that we're going to invest in tackling violence against women and girls. We've invested record sums, more than £230 million, to address this heinous issue. At the same time, during my mayoralty, we've strengthened the protection of young people, provided support for those who are the victims of violence and exploitation. But I wasn't happy whether we were doing enough. So I asked His Majesty's Inspector to come in, an outsider to come in and check whether we were doing all that we could. They weren't completely happy. They made a number of recommendations. We've implemented all those recommendations. We have a child-first approach in London.
Well, that was the mayor speaking yesterday. Let's turn to Chris Wilde. Now, one newspaper, the Daily Express, has made a lot of ground on this, and they've been helped by Chris Wilde. He's an author and campaigner and joins me now. Just a little bit of your background. I understand you've worked in the care system. Is that right, Mr. Wilde? Good morning.
Yes, good morning. It is, yeah. I'm a survivor myself. I was in the children's home in Halifax, West Yorkshire, which at the time was run by paedophiles. I came back into the system in 2015 as a professional in London to work on the front line. And yeah, that's kind of where
I think we need to clarify. When you say the town, you didn't say the town was run by paedophiles, did you? Did you say it was overrun by?
The children's home at the time I was in.
I see. Okay. I just had to be aware of the Halifax local authority. So I see the point you made. Yes, the children. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So tragically, you have a personal interest, and you've decided to look at what you think is going on in London. What is the picture that you've uncovered?
Well, I came back into the care system 28 years later as a professional and seen that nothing had changed, but children, in particular in London where I worked, were still being neglected, abused. Going into work, seeing young people being picked up by adults and going missing for 2 or 3 days, then these young people coming back traumatised and having that conversation, telling them to go to the police, reporting this to the police and the police not taking this seriously. Now, it's quite important to just say why, because when young people who are involved in care settings and they report to the police just don't take it serious. There's that dichotomy between local authorities and the care system. And it's that fear of being called a liar and not believed, or that fear of the consequences of reporting such things to the police. And that's why, we've got a disaster catastrophe on our hands at the moment, where so many young people within care settings are being abused, but they're too scared to report it because they're not believed.
How is it possible, Chris, if I may call you that, is it possible, Chris, to give us an idea of the extent? Do you have any idea how many cases we might be talking about here?
Well, think about it this way. I'm just one person independent, and I've worked in numerous settings around London, and I've seen over 40 cases where children, young people have been abused. Now, in London, we call it county line, but let me define a county line for you, Nick. So I work with young boys. I've gone into Cookhamwood Jail, gone into Moorland Jail, where these young boys think they're getting into a county line because it's cool and it's glorified by certain TV programs. But when they get into these gangs, they're sent to houses where they're raped by males, by men, grown-ups. That is the definition of a county line. It's same as the grooming gangs. It's the same thing, called a spade, a paedophile. It's the same people just wearing different coats. And in London, remember in London, we the data is not collected as such. We're talking about 9,000 cases at the moment. But how many more people are too scared to come forward to report abuse cases? I'm thinking we're going to see this. It's going to be a national crisis.
How do you respond to the response from the mayor?
Well, as I have done helping the Express and on my work lobbying Parliament, speaking to parliamentarians, is that we've got to respond. I've been involved in two major reviews, the Online Safety Bill and the Independent Care Review of Children's Social Care. Within that, we put lots of recommendations which still have not been implemented to keep children safe. It's never a policy winner for politicians. And as they use it to vacillate and to score political points against each other, children are dying on our streets. They're vulnerable. They've been abused. We need some robust action. It needs to happen now. And we need to stop using it to score points and make it a racial thing.
I'm just going to play some of your words back to you. You said children are dying. So people's lives, children's lives are being taken in this.
Of course, because they're taking their own lives, Nick. And all this evidence.
Oh, I'm so sorry. People are taking their lives. I'm sorry. I see. Yeah.
Because nothing's done. They're living in trauma. And when they're trying to get help and support, it doesn't exist. That is the consequences of young people in care. There is no support system in place, and people just don't take their cases serious.
When the mayor told my LBC colleague Joseph Draper that they brought in His Majesty's Inspector as an outside independent, how do you respond to that?
Well, good. Well, finally, you know, we need a fresh pair of eyes, somebody who's not so... Is Sadiq Khan ignorant? Yes. Is Sadiq Khan arrogant? Yes. Does he care? I don't know. But it does need a fresh pair of eyes. And I'm glad now, after the letter from Sir Mark Rowley, but he's actually doing something about it. He's doing his job.
When Sir Sadiq says, your words, not mine, concerning grooming gangs, what do you take from that? What do you see as a definition of a grooming gang? Because Susan Hall, the Conservative, calls them raping gangs. Chris?
But, Nick, that's what they are. They're paedophiles. If you rape and abuse a child, you are a paedophile. You're not a gangster. You're not a groomer. You are a paedophile. And that is the dichotomy. That is the problem. We glorify it in the South by calling them county lines. I mean, you've seen all these TV programs about gangsters. It's the same thing. They're exploiting children and abusing children. That they are all the same, just wearing different coats.
And lastly, if you look at some of the grisly examples in other towns and cities up and down the country, Chris, typically they operate around fast food outlets and taxi ranks and whatever else it might be. Is a similar picture in London as you understand it?
Nick, it's no coincidence, but people gravitate towards... I'm from Halifax, West Yorkshire. It's no coincidence they gravitate towards the north because, A, big problems with unemployment, deprivation, a lot more children in the care system in the north. So they gravitate towards that. But they all work together with the south. It's been around since time began, Nick, and we need to respond. There needs to be a unity across all parties, and we need to keep children safe, and that's it.
Chris Wilde wrote The State of It, Stories from the Front Line of a Broken Care System and Damage. Grateful for your time, Chris Wilde, author and campaigner. You get the sense that story is going to break soon, don't you, somehow? I've no idea how, presumably some arrests, and then details will come out, and then we will see exactly what constitutes the gang, if that's what we're going to say. Let's go to Sean in Edinburgh, who's been hanging on the line for some time. Sean, the point you want to make on... Oh, I'm so sorry, you're talking 4-day week. Sean, I'll come to you on that in just a moment. Let's get Nigel. It's a grooming gang call. My fault, Sean. Sorry. Nigel in Temple Fortune, a word on the grooming gang story. Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I'm appalled by the behaviour of the Mayor of London, who, let's not forget, is also the Crime Commissioner for London.
Yes.
And his attitude towards Susan Hall is despicable. The Metropolitan Police and the Crime Commissioner have a duty to protect people, property, and that includes children. And when you've got 9,000 alleged cases, not 9, or 90 or 900, but 9,000, it's appalling. And his attitude to try and deflect away from this is shameful. So how do parents feel safe in London if their children don't feel safe?
Do you realise if just a small percentage of those 9,000, and I'm well done for saying alleged, if just a small... We could be talking about 900 cases here. If just a small percentage turn out to be true, that's the reality, Nigel.
It's absolutely shocking. And not only is it shocking, it's a world embarrassment. People look upon London and they see this and they think, is it safe for our children to come here with us on holiday or vacation or to send them there to college or to school?
Absolutely right. Nigel, thank you. Sean, coming to you on a 4-day week. Let's just get some of the emails that have come in on this and texts. Trevor says you should see how much council tax we pay in Hartlepool, one of the poorest towns in the country. £1,620.45 for a 3-bedroom house. My goodness. Lynn in Devon. When did the interests of staff overtake the interests of customers and those who pay the wages? Staff interests are now the highest priority of decision makers. I assume that's because they're fully paid up of the virtual signing Liberati class. Sean in Edinburgh, you are on this and you're on the radio. Sean, your take on the idea of a 4-day week for local authority staff?
Yeah, I just think about, you know, people's bills that they've got to pay. You know, your biggest bills and outgoings are your mortgage, your rent, your energy bills, yeah, and your council tax, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you paid your mortgage and you only paid off 80% of it, but you'd paid 100% of the money, you know, would you be left happy as a customer? Absolutely not.
No.
So I think not. And I think as well, now with like things like the prevalence of AI as well, any sort of public sector should be chasing efficiencies to then pass those savings on to people who pay for those costs. You know, the first person who should benefit shouldn't be staff, it should be the people who are taxpayers. You know, in my job, we're very mindful every penny we spend is passed on to the public, and any savings that we're chasing savings through things like technology, and it doesn't sound like that's happening here.
I don't want to ask where you work, but what sort of line are you in, Sean?
I work in the energy sector, in electricity, and, you know, really, that's a difficult job, quite contentious as well, but, you know, we're looking to make savings and keep our costs down, because we understand that at the end of the day, it's people like me and you that've got to pay energy bills to keep things going. I just think, you know, and I'm the first person to say if it's a positive thing for staff, absolutely do that. But if you want to work 4 days, then maybe people should consider doing four days of compressed hours. You know, you can do your 40 hours in 4 days rather than five, if that's what you like. If you don't work 5 days and work four, just do longer days.
Thanks for that, Sean. Thanks for hanging on the line. You got your points across very well. Coming up later in the show, we'll come back to that conversation about house building and concerns from experts in the housing industry. The government is going to feel woefully behind that. It was a very ambitious target, in fairness to them, 1.5 million homes over the lifetime of their government, but it seems it's going to get nowhere near that is the reality. We'll come back to that conversation. But coming up directly after the news, we will be celebrating the great life of...
I have seen more intelligent creatures than you lying on their backs at the bottom of ponds. I have seen better organised creatures than you running round farmyards with their heads cut off. Now collect your things and get out.
Prunella Scales. Farewell, Mrs. Fawlty. 8:45, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Hurricane Melissa has reached Cuba as a Category 3 storm after striking Jamaica with winds of 185 miles per hour. The migrant sex offender Hadish Kabatu has been deported to Ethiopia, and dozens of people are reported to have been killed in Israeli strikes in Gaza. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for many, strong winds and occasionally heavy rain further north, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. So many problems on the M25 this morning, and traffic is now being held clockwise just after Junction 25 at the A10. It's following an accident, and the delay's almost back to Junction 24 at Potter's Bar. Then also clockwise, it's very busy to Junction 5 at the M26 after a van broke down earlier. And then also on the M25, there are anti-clockwise queues to Junction 28 at the A12. That queue goes all the way back to the Dartford Tunnel. It was after that car was on fire earlier, but all the lanes are now back open. On the trains, there are severe delays on the Elizabeth line between Whitechapel and Shenfield. Also severe delays on the Bakerloo line, but also minor delays on the Central, the Circle, the Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines.
This is LBC.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay, but I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Switching to Vodafone full fibre broadband is now as easy as pie. Ooh, freshly baked. It's a walk in the park. Hello, little fella. It's like taking candy from a baby. Come on, as if I'd do that. With One Touch Switch, it's easy. We sort everything out for you. We even contact your current provider. Plus, we'll help towards leaving fees. Switch today to full fibre broadband with Vodafone.
Up to £200 credit to cover leaving fees. More information and terms at vodafone.co.uk/broadband.
Trains are three bridges for two adults, one skeleton and one fairy werewolf, as you do.
Just one pumpkin each, kids. Charlie, not that one, mate. It's nearly as big as you.
Back on the train with two little monsters and a couple of pumpkins. Now off home to spend a good 3 hours carving. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
Do you know your state pension age? No. Maybe you're not sure, or you don't know how to check. It's so quick and easy to check online. All you need is your date of birth. Knowing your state pension age helps you think about your future. So check yours today. Search state pension age on gov.uk and simply enter your date of birth. State pension age. It's good to know.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
Just like when you amplify your advertising with radio. 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Protect your small business and understand cybersecurity.
8.49. Poll after poll shows that Fawlty Towers is the best loved or among the top three comedies ever made on British TV. And all the critics agree, while of course the writing is down to the brilliant, the genius that is John Cleese, it was also the double act that really made the show. And here is Sybil's very first appearance on Fawlty Towers as she established her character immediately, barking orders at the unfortunate Basil.
Now.
Well, I'm doing this, dear. I'm doing the menu.
Well, you've got all morning to do the menu. Why don't you hang the picture now? Well?
Yes, all right. I will do the menu. I don't think you realise how long it takes to do the menu. But no, it doesn't matter. I'll hang the picture now. And if the menus are late for lunch, it doesn't matter. The guests can all come and look at the picture until they are ready, right? Please don't alarm yourself. It's only my wife laughing.
Good Lord!
I have seen more intelligent creatures than you lying on their backs at the bottom of ponds. I have seen better organised creatures than you running round farmyards with their heads cut off. Now collect your things and get out.
What are you looking at me like that for?
Basil, there's a kipper sticking out of your jacket.
For me, it was another life when we first borrowed a boat and went on the canals, you know. It's like a home or a flat, you know, when I'm cooking and we've got a lovely double bed and the scenery, of course, is amazing.
From her first appearance on Fawlty Towers to one of her last appearances on television on The Great Canal Journeys, let's turn to Joan Bakewell, broadcaster, author, Labour peer, long-standing TV legend, who joins me now. I want to start with condolences, because I know you're a long-time friend of Prunella's, but also a degree of envy. She must have been a great person to have as a mate, Joan. Good morning.
She was wonderful company. She was warm-hearted. She was open, generous, welcoming. She hadn't any of that edge of Sybil at all. She was just a delight.
She was also a great actor. As the Daily Telegraph points out, she appeared in 1988 as Queen Elizabeth II in A Question of Attribution, and the critic A.N. Wilson praised the eerie accuracy, I quote, the eerie accuracy that no one watching could have told the difference between Miss Scales and the real thing, that highly distinctive hairdo, curls as crisp as a barrister's wig, and that Christmas broadcast voice. She was a great actor, Joan.
Well, she was. And what was brilliant about that performance as Queen Elizabeth was that the way she leant back on the heels of her feet, which is what the Queen does, because the Queen doesn't need to lean forward. And if an actress leans back on her feet, somehow gives her a detachment, which in the normal playing of a part wouldn't happen. And I thought that was a marvellous observation that she made, to put her weight on the heels of her feet.
Joan, did you ever find out what Prunella Scales thought of Mrs. Fawlty?
I think she thought it was a most brilliantly written part. I think she knew that it was her destiny to make it her own. But I think she thought it was a fine opportunity, an amazing piece of theatre and television. And she would recognise that. She was an absolute pro. She would see that the scripts, the timing, the pacing, the character were all there for her to enlarge on, which, of course, she did. She used it to extend the scope of Sybil extraordinarily.
The fact that I was laughing at her lines, which I honestly, Joan, I cannot tell you how many times I've heard that or seen it. When it first came out, it's replayed every... And I'm still laughing at her delivery now, 50 or whatever years on. It shows the ability that she had.
Yeah, she had the capacity for... she was a professional. Yeah. She understood comic timing, emphasis, rhythm of a line. None of it was accidental. All of it was her skill. Brilliant.
Do you think she ever thought it became a bit of a millstone? Did it preclude her from getting... Did it preclude her from getting other work or exploring other opportunities anyway, Joan?
Well, she did... question of attribution. No, I don't think she found it a millstone. I think she rather relished it, you know. I mean, it entered her life and filled her life. It brought her a huge audience and a following and made people smile. And that was something very typical of Prue. She enjoyed company. She liked being among people who smiled at her. So that was part of the reward of the part itself.
Of course, we're approaching the first anniversary of the death of Timothy West. It would be in November when she lost him. Theirs was just a unique love, wasn't it? Was it 60-plus years they were together?
It was, and it was. All the friends knew that. I mean, their home was open and welcoming, full of colour and light and pictures and laughter. A good conversation, a wonderful comfort out into the garden, easygoing, not at all posh or pretentious, just wonderful.
And lastly, we saw that relationship, that love in Great Canal Journeys, didn't we? Which was, of course, to be her last bit of TV work. It just shone through the affection between the couple.
Oh, absolutely. You couldn't fake that. I mean, they were very close, and so with their children as well. I mean, it was a great family unit, and everybody loved the door being thrown open. Come on in. Everybody's here. It was a great pleasure to be a part of their family.
Commiserations to you. You've lost a great mate, but I'm really grateful for your time today. Thanks so much, Joan. Joan Bakewell, author, Labour peer, legendary broadcaster. Condolences, of course, but condolences to the family as well, the two sons and the stepdaughter, and to everyone who knew and who worked with her. Hers really was a unique talent. Prunella Scales died aged 93. Farewell, Mrs. Fawlty. 5 to 9. Let's come back to a very active story now, which is the grooming gangs and possibly... as one of the callers was saying there, Nigel, 9,000 cases, 9,000 under investigation. Dear Lord, if just 10%, let's just say 10% of that is true, right? That's 900. That's nearly 1,000 cases that have gone on in London over a period of years. Dear me, Oscar is in Blackburn. Your point on this, Oscar, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Thank you for taking my call.
Not at all, sir. Thank you.
I worked in safeguarding for decades.
Have you? Right.
Yeah. There's a big difference between grooming gang and county lines. So grooming gang is an organised gang that is sexual exploitation. Mm-hmm. So it's passing young people around, driving them around to... It's forced prostitution. Whereas a county line is an organised criminal gang that works over different counties, using children to pass drugs, namely, across county to county, which is where we got its name from. I just think when Sakir...
Sadiq, do you mean?
When he's talking, I think he needs to be clear about his terminology and what he's actually saying they're investigating. Are they investigating grooming gangs or are they investigating county lines or is it both? And if it's both, great.
How would you... just go through the distinction again, not least for my listeners. So as they hear this story develop, as someone who's worked in this professionally, just break down the two different areas again for us, Oscar.
So grooming gangs is where they are grooming children into sexual exploitation. It's where they use them into forced prostitution. County lines is where they manage to convince it is a type of grooming.
But couldn't one lead to the other? Couldn't someone who's... Sorry, go on.
Yes, it can lead to... one leads to the other. Sometimes they overlap. Sometimes they're being groomed to sell drugs and for prostitution. It's just county lines is between counties. It's an organised gang that uses a line that goes from Lancashire to Yorkshire or Lancashire
wherever.
Sometimes to London. You know,
now, you're calling me from Blackburn. Sadly, that's had grooming gang issues, as from memory, hasn't it?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I work for within the whole of Lancashire, so...
I see.
Across a lot of places like Blackpool as well, that's also had its issues, and it's for somebody who works in it. The only way I can explain it is like you are firefighting without any resources. It's like you're sending a firefighter to deal with a fire with only half a hose. It's horrific.
And are the number of cases going up, or is it just we're more aware of it now, so we're reporting them more? Which of that would you say it is, Oscar?
Again, I think it's a mixture of both. I think people are more aware, so neighbours are actually reporting suspicious activity, whereas before they perhaps didn't know about it. And people in the general public are starting to understand some of the telltale signs.
Okay. Yeah.
But also, it is on the rise because we haven't got enough social workers, police officers, trained experts to be able to tackle it. It's rife.
You said lastly it's like being a firefighter without having any kit. So what is the equivalent of the trucks and the hoses and the water that you would need to fight this, Oscar?
We need to have more social workers and police forces that are understanding how to deal with it, to break it up. We need to make sure that schools, youth workers, everybody on the front line is fully aware and has the ability and the trust to be able to report it and it be dealt with, rather than it just sat on a desk waiting for days and weeks and months. It's got to be a cooperative approach between all levels of service, between schools, education, police, social workers, the courts.
And everyone else. Oscar, so thank you so much for calling in. Really enjoyed speaking with you. Let's just share a couple of texts or emails before we go to the news. Bibi in Westrum, Sadiq Khan was totally disrespectful and despicable behaviour towards Susan Hall. Is it because she's a woman? It shows him up to be a disgusting person. Sufyan says grooming gangs, or what you want to call them, has been going on for decades. Now it's being brought to attention. You need to research some places in London where celebrities and politicians were going, where children were kept under care. Well, I'm sure there are 9,000 cases, so I would imagine something will track back to that. I won't name that particular property, Sufyan, because obviously I can't, because we don't know the validity of it, but I'm sure it's going to be part of those investigations. All right, coming up after the news, it looks like a target will be missed. Target of the paper, house building. Editor-in-chief of City AM, our financial commentator, Christian May, told me...
The UK hasn't built more than 300,000 homes in a single year since 1977. And that was when the state was full steam ahead on council house and social house building. So they say they're going to do it. The industry says you're not going to do it.
And what will the impact be as a morning after pill is now available for free in England? Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the Jamaican Prime Minister Andrew Holness has declared a disaster area after Hurricane Melissa hit the island. Hundreds of thousands of people are without power and communications as a result of catastrophic winds and flash flooding. Melissa has now arrived in Cuba as a weaker Category 3 storm. The Jamaican Energy Minister Daryl Vaz says the impact has been horrific.
There's devastation to infrastructure, life and livelihoods. So we're hoping that by tomorrow we'll be able to do an assessment to start the recovery process.
The migrant sex offender who was released from prison by mistake has now arrived in Ethiopia after he was deported. Adish Kabatu was let out of HMP Chelmsford in error on Friday. Israel has continued airstrikes in Gaza overnight, with dozens of people reportedly killed. The Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, ordered the attacks after accusing Hamas of killing a soldier and staging the recovery of a hostage. Hamas has rejected the claims. A government minister has recommitted to a target to build 1.5 million homes in England by the next election. The house building industry has warned the government is on track to miss the election pledge, but they've blamed slow demand, red tape and the cost of construction. But Border Security Minister Alex Norris has told Nick that the promise will be delivered.
I'm sad to see that story. The reality is we inherited a broken house building system. You know, the lack of targets basically meant that the market grounds were halt. Of course, that's taking time to ramp up. However, whether it's through the changes to the planning framework, whether it's the planning and infrastructure bill that's working its way through Parliament, we're making changes to make it better to build those communities in this country. So we're committed to it.
Women are now able to get the morning after pill free of charge in pharmacies across England. Emergency contraception was already free from most GPs and sexual health clinics, but cost up to £30 from chemists. Health officials say it's one of the biggest changes to sexual health services since the 1960s. Santander has cancelled the release of its third quarter results. It had been due to post them this morning, but says it needs greater clarity over a motor finance compensation scheme. The bank has called on ministers to step in to address lenders' concerns. in the city. The FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 97.36. That is up 39. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 13. LBC weather, most places seeing some sunshine and showers, strong winds and occasionally heavy rain further north. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Oh, what's that?
That is my new 4K Ring video doorbell. Looks like there's two dodgy blokes outside the house.
Oh, they're looking in the window. They're testing the door.
Right, two-way talk on. Let them hear this. Yep, that's done it. Look at them go. Always know who's at your door with Ring's new 4K security cameras. Available now at ring.com and Amazon.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
1 in 4 minutes after nine, Wednesday, October the 29th. Coming up in this hour, Labour will miss the 1.5 million home target. So say house builders. The government saying we'll get there. They're going to have to get a heck of a sprint on. I'll give you the latest numbers, the scores on the doors, and tell you more on that. Plus, what will the impact be as the morning after pill is now available for free in England? Malcolm Harrison is chief executive of the Company Chemists Association. He welcomes the news.
We're really, really delighted that this service has been launched. It's something that we at the CCA have been calling for many years. It means that women up and down the country will be able to access the morning after pill for free on the NHS, regardless of where they live.
Plus...
Lonely, I'm Mr. Lonely.
As a report says, 8.5 million of us will be on our own by 2032, which is really just around the corner. I'll be asking, have you ever experienced loneliness? Or are you lonely? And how do you beat the loneliness blues?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As discussed in the first hour, house builders have warned the government's budget watchdog ministers will not hit their target to build 1.5 million homes by the end of the decade. It's a further blow to Rachel Reeves, less than a month actually, before her budget. In a private letter to the Office for Budget Responsibility, the OBR as you'll hear it called, Britain's developers say its forecasts for economic growth from house building are simply too optimistic. Well, more from that expert in just a moment. But let's give you a little bit of background. Earlier in the week, I spoke with Housing Secretary Steve Reid. I asked him how many homes were built this year and how close are we to hitting that 1.5 million target set by Labour for the lifetime of this Parliament.
This year to date, 231,000 new homes this Parliament so far to date. But I'll tell you, this is a green shoot. This is a good news. The number of starts, that's where the new building starts to happen, up by 29% today over last year. But we need to stimulate it more. It's flatlining. It's been on the floor for around 3 years. So the reason I announced that stimulus package last week is to get London building again, and I will make further announcements over coming weeks to get house building moving up and down the country. It's one of the best levers we can pull to get the economy growing, but also if we want to tackle the housing crisis that we see across the whole of Britain right now, we have to get Britain building, and that is what I'm using my job to do.
Just words? Blah, 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 as Greta Thunberg would say. Our financial commentator and editor-in-chief of City AM, Christian May, in the first hour, told me why he thought the target could be difficult to reach and why this intervention from the Home Builders Federation is so significant.
This matters because in March the OBR said that if the UK built 1.3 million homes by the end of this Parliament, it would increase GDP by 0.2% and give Rachel Reeves, that is, about £7 billion of much-needed space. Now, are they going to recalculate off the back of the letter from the house builders who say we're not going to hit this target? And there are lots of reasons why. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it build. The government has put lots of effort into its planning reform bills, etc. But at the same time, conditions are pretty difficult for home builders for a number of reasons. First of all, there are lots of new regulations and taxes. The regulations on the size and kind of windows you can have. In London in particular, the figures are particularly stark because post-Grenfell, there are a lot of regulations about number of staircases you need if your building's over a certain height. Lots of viability concerns, as the industry puts it, about once you tot up all the obligations around social housing and local infrastructure, levies and taxes, is it viable to build and sell these houses? Lots of people argue at the moment it's not, particularly in London. And then there's the wider issue of the economy. Are people in a house-buying mood at the moment? And I would suggest probably not on the whole. So the government wants to build 1.5 million homes over the course of this parliament. The UK hasn't built more than 300,000 homes in a single year since 1977. And that was the state was full steam ahead on council house and social house building. So they say they're going to do it. The industry says we're not going to do it. Is it time to ditch the target? It's not just semantics, because the OBR is totting up what kind of economic benefit would come from the government hitting its target.
So is the government ready to backtrack? Not a bit of it. On the first hour of the show, I spoke with the minister. Admittedly, he's on border security and asylum, but there was no shifting. Minister Alex Norris, and this is his response.
Yeah, we've made that commitment and we're going to deliver on it. I'm sad to see that story. The reality is we inherited a broken house building system. You know, the lack of targets basically meant that the market grounds were halt. Of course, that's taking time to ramp up. However, whether it's through changes to the planning framework, whether it's the planning and infrastructure bill that's working its way through Parliament, we're making changes to make it, you know, better to build those communities in this country. So we're committed to it. It's crucial to this country. So, you know, we're going for it.
But Minister, lastly, I don't expect you to know the numbers. I think it comes in about 180,000 built so far. Our city commentator, Christine May, was telling us that the last time a government hit 300,000 a year, which is what you'd know, was in 1977. What makes you think you can go back to those halcyon days, Minister?
Well, first of all, we need those houses. We need those communities.
Yeah, we do need them, but how are you actually going to get the bricks in the ground, spades in the ground and bricks on the walls?
But we were clear with the British people from the start. It wouldn't be an even distribution from year one, because the baseline from which we're building was so weak. That's why we've made the changes that we've made. As I say, whether it's the planning framework, whether it's the planning and infrastructure bill that's still working its way through Parliament, again frustrated by the opposition because they don't want us to succeed. But those are the foundations, if you excuse a dreadful and inadvertent pun, Nick, of that approach. You need those things in place, you know, and so that's why we've taken that approach. It will scale up over the Parliament, and that's what will deliver.
Now, this has been sparked by this letter, and let's turn to Steve Turner, Executive Director of the Home Builders Federation, who's written to the OBR. Thanks for coming on, Mr. Turner. I've obviously had the opportunity to read it, but can you, in brief, tell my listeners what you and your colleagues are saying from the Federation? Morning to you.
Good morning. What we're saying is, in the letter to the OBR, is that the projection they have made over the period of the next 5 years, we feel somewhat ambitious. And that whilst we absolutely welcome the changes this government has made with regard to planning and the ambition that the government's got to get to 1.5, and indeed Steve Reid has come in with a clear brief and determination to increase house building, and all of that is very welcome, but there are some significant barriers that still remain that the government has to tackle if we're going to get to anywhere near the run rate they need to get to 1.5.
What are those obstacles that need to be cleared, Mr. Turner?
So there's two main areas. One is viability. We've seen over recent years a huge increase in the regulatory costs and requirements that are being put onto new house building sites. Some of your previous guests summed them up there in terms of, you know, we've seen recently in terms of environmental efficiency. Solar panels on every house, heat pumps on every house, car charging points on every house. We've seen biodiversity net gain requirements, etc., etc. These are all on top of the existing requirements of contributions towards a local infrastructure, contributions towards affordable housing, etc., etc. And we've got further taxes coming down the line in terms of another building safety levy that will add another £3,000 per house in the next year, and a 3,000% increase in the landfill tax that potentially will add £15,000 to every house built. So that's meaning that swathes of the country are simply not viable to develop. Zoopla published a report last week that said 65% of the country faced viability issues. So if it's not viable to develop, developers will not start new sites.
Why is an area deemed to be non-viable?
It's non-viable if it costs you more to buy the land, to construct the houses and to pay the taxes to the local authority and central government than you can get as a return when you sell those houses. And certain areas you're seeing viability negatives of up to 20%. And no private business is going to start a site that you're going to lose 20% on. So we've got to find a way to reduce the level of taxation and regulatory costs that have been levied on the industry in recent years.
You mentioned safety measures. I'm sure everyone at the Home Builders Federation wants safe housing, but are we over-regulating in that field, Mr. Turner?
I don't think you can over-regulate in that field. What we've got to make sure, though, is that we've got a framework that is deliverable. We've currently got the new building safety regulator. We've got tens of thousands of homes blocked at the one of the planning stages through that process you've got to get to because they've simply not got the capacity. They are looking to address it. But all of these things, in particular in urban areas, are just delaying construction of the houses we've got. And that's why you're seeing build levels in London in particular down at sort of less than a third of where they need to be. So we've got to tackle all these blockages. The other main area of issue at the minute is affordability, that young people in particular now are just not able to get a mortgage at an affordable level. So we're seeing working people across the country unable to get onto the property ladder. And quite simply, if buyers can't buy, builders can't build, because ultimately you need to get a return on investment by selling those homes. So until we create an economy within which young people can buy, and it's the first time in decades there's not a support scheme in place to allow young people to buy, you're not going to be able to give the industry confidence to invest in these sites because it's got no guarantee of a return on investment because it can't sell the home. So there's a number of areas government's got to address, as well as the very welcome planning measures we've seen.
Got enough builders?
We've got enough builders for the current level of build. Clearly, if we're going to increase to the level the government wants to get to, we've got to hugely increase the workforce. And there are measures being put in place to allow the industry to scale up, but that will take time. And that will be a challenge. But at the minute, that most certainly isn't a challenge because numbers are not going up.
Lastly, you referenced London. Can you just break it down nationally across country? Are there any sort of growth areas where you and your colleagues feel ground can be made up?
I think we've got to increase housing supply across the whole of the country. You've got viability issues mainly in the sort of north of Midlands. You've got affordability issues in the south. Mm. So we've got to tackle these issues across the country in different ways to make sure we can build more homes in all areas because, you know, all communities across the country need those new homes.
They say 1.5. What's your best guess after 5 years of the government? What do you think they'll get to? Half of that?
I think it's very difficult to estimate. I mean, to get to 1.5, obviously, we need to be building 300,000 homes a year.
Well, they've missed the first year already, Steve, so that's gone.
Last year, we were 100,000 short. I think this year, you're going to be 100,000 short at least again. So that would mean later in the Parliament, you need to be considerably above 300,000 to get anywhere near 1.5. And I think the measures that any government needs to put in place, we've been under-delivering housing in this country for decades. So even if we don't get to 1.5 within this Parliament, hopefully the measures the government will put in place to get to some sort of a run rate that's equivalent to 300,000 homes a year will allow us to deliver them in a five-year period from that point.
Steve, thank you for your time. I must leave it there. Steve Turner is Executive Director of the Home Builders Federation. They've written this letter to the OBR, and that's what's got it on the front page of your newspapers, and we'll come to your reactions right after this. We're also going to be discussing...
Lonely... I'm Mr. Lonely.
The report that says 8.5 million of us will be living on our own by 2032 is almost just around the corner. Have you been lonely? How to combat the loneliness blues. Beat the loneliness blues. That's after the 9:16 LBC News headlines. Here's Thomas Watts.
Hurricane Melissa has reached Cuba as a Category 3 storm after striking Jamaica with winds of 185 miles per hour. The migrant sex offender Hadish Kabati has been deported to Ethiopia and dozens of people are reported to have been killed in Israeli strikes in Gaza. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for many, strong winds and occasionally heavy rain further north, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M25 is blocked clockwise between junctions 25 at the A10 and 26 at Waltham Abbey. It's following an accident, and those delays go all the way back to junction 24 at Potter's Bar. Also on the M25, there are clockwise queues at junction 5 at the M26 after a van broke down earlier. The M4 remains very busy eastbound at junction 3 at the A312. That's following an accident. Those delays almost back to the M25. In Peckham, the A2 Old Kent Road remains closed in both directions following an accident. On the train, severe delays on the Elizabeth line between Whitechapel and Shenfield, and severe delays on the Bakerloo line. Also minor delays on the Central, the Circle, the Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines.
This is LBC.
Owen built this business from scratch. Now it's all in the cloud. His ideas, his data, his future, which is fine. Until someone clicks on a link they shouldn't. BT Complete Cloud Secure protects your business online. It filters harmful sites and blocks malware from just £3.30 per user per month, keeping Owen's business data, well, Owen's. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity. T's and C's apply. Prices exclude VAT at 20%. 12-month minimum term applies.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
Get that Euro Millions feeling this Friday. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots. 10 more Lumbos. 10 more salsas. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires this Friday. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app.
Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
It's easy to forget just how crazy things have been over the past couple of years. Every day we wake up to something new. Tariffs and taxes on anything and everything. It's tempting to put your hands in your ears and go, la, 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 I can't hear you, until it's all over. But you know what's the best response to crazy times? A plan for your money. And Quilter can help. Because let's face it, there's probably going to be some crazy times ahead too. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay, but I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO. Do energy differently. Beyond customers only. Eligibility required. Redemption limits apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
Targets are good things. Businesses, governments. You should have targets, but they need to be attainable targets. And I don't want to say, but from the moment they came in, I was saying 300,000 a year? Now, what I didn't know is what Christian May told us in the first hour, our financial commentator, that would need to go back. It was 1977 when we were last building at the rate of 300,000 a year. And as the gentleman from the Federation has just explained, we've missed the target for the first year, almost by about 100,000. These are broad numbers. Almost certainly they'll come in the same. So that means now you've got to lump another 200,000 to pick up for the first 2 years. It's unattainable. Isn't it, Nick in Brighton? What do you say, Nick? Good morning.
Yeah, 100%. We're a small house builder, and the hoops you have to go through to try and get a site underway is ridiculous.
You say you're small. Yeah. I mean, typically, how many do you do a year? Give me an idea of your business.
Only 8 to 10 houses a year.
8 to 10 houses a year. Okay. And has it always been that number, or were you doing more or fewer? What was it?
No, it's always been the same number, but but what we're having to do now is we're sitting on land for a longer amount of time to try and get it through the planning process.
Well, that doesn't help you because you're not going to make any money out of that, just sitting on a bit of land, are you?
The material prices have gone through the roof. For instance, I've been dealing with a local authority the last 4 weeks just to get a access crossing across a culvert, a ditch, in other words. Mm. And a gentleman newly started in the job for the local authority has not been given a phone. So for 4 weeks, we've been communicating by email, and he still hasn't got a phone. Is what you go against. So I've got another site with the building net gain, which is basically whatever was there in greenery has to be replaced by 10% more. You have to buy a land bank.
How long have you been at it, Nick?
15 years.
How has it changed over those 15 years?
The hoops now are ridiculous. Crested notes, for instance, £20,000, 60-day delay to the site.
They've discovered crested newts on the property, on the land, have they?
No, they didn't find... In 60 days, they didn't find one crested newt.
Right.
On another site, slow worms, found six slow worms, cost us £26,000, 70-day delay.
What do you do with them?
We relocated them.
Why does it cost 26 grand to relocate six slow worms?
Because basically they've got to send two people, three people down every single day to have a look within the cordoned off area.
This is ridiculous.
But in saying that, I've probably been more successful than Keir Starmer in relocating them.
Maybe we should get you involved in that. Where do you think this target's going to end up? Obviously, they're not going to hit it. How short?
I think the problem at the minute is the social housing providers are shying away from buying properties at the minute. A lot of big builders have stopped or gone bust.
And do you do the whole thing? You source the land, you buy the land, you get the builders, you sell the house at the end of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So have you got enough builders on your books?
Make a decision.
Have you got enough?
We've got about 10 or 12 builders that work for us constantly, 52 weeks of the year, random sites.
But I would imagine, I don't know, the price of plasterboard and mortar and bricks is going up.
Ridiculous. For instance, cement for years was always £2.95 a bag, went up to £6.50 a bag.
Wow.
It's just dropping down now to about £5.25 a bag. Timber, 400% increase we saw after COVID.
Good grief.
And it's never ever. It's come down slowly, but the merchants are suffering now. So I'm not saying we need a recession, but we need this price correction, because the problem is the governments have been shoring up the markets. We've never had the true price correction to the land and to all the rest of it. Plus, as well, you've got community infrastructure levy.
Yeah.
£200 a square metre. So that adds. I've got a site with two houses that adds £115,000. The council want paying on day one. And then when you've completed the property, if you haven't got anyone to move into it in 6 weeks, which you'll never get a solicitor to do anything in 6 weeks, they then want paying for council tax.
And do you have to put a heat pump on every property and a car charger?
Yeah, heat pump. Yeah, I've just done 9 flats. So before, 9 boilers would cost you £5,400. Had to do 9 heat pumps with a air extraction system, and that come in at just over £90,000.
Good grief.
Yeah.
But you still make a dollar.
Well, I don't know whether you do. You're making it, but you're having to...
You're running flat out to stay where you were five years ago.
My job is spent going all around the country trying to find materials at cheaper prices, and everyone's fighting for the business.
All right. And you develop... Don't just in Sussex or the whole of the country?
Just in Sussex.
Okay. Do you want to mention your company? You don't have to.
No,
you'll leave it there. Nick, thanks for all the background. That's a tough one, isn't it? Those heat pumps. My God. A bag of cement. £2.95. £6 now. That is tough. We'll have more on that in a moment. Andrew, you'll be the next caller. But to another matter, you on your own. Have you ever experienced loneliness? It's on the rise in Britain. The number of people living alone expected to surge by a fifth by 2032, which is not that far away in reality. Single-person dwellings, which is also linked to our conversation here, I suppose, will account for 33% of all households in England, and it'll get to almost 8.6 million. These are official figures, by the way, from the Office for National Statistics. There are around 7.17 or 7.17 million in 2022, which is around 30%, but the number will go to 8.6. Let's talk to Kate Jopling. Now, Kate's involved in the Campaign to End Loneliness, has also authored a report on loneliness, and specifically during the pandemic. Is that right, Kate? Morning to you.
I've written lots on loneliness, but yeah, looked at how the pandemic had impacted our levels of loneliness, yeah.
And how did the COVID pandemic impact our levels of loneliness, Kate?
Well, it was really interesting in that I think everyone thought it would go absolutely through the roof, but what we saw was a steady growth in loneliness, which we still have not recovered from. So we are a country that is more lonely than we were before that terrible event.
What are the factors that are bringing this about?
Well, I think what's complicated with loneliness is it really depends on the individual, but we can see patterns. So we know, for example, that living alone, so that the issue that we're highlighting today, that's been highlighted by the ONS today, is a risk factor for loneliness. You're also more likely to be lonely if you're living with ill health or with a disability, if you are in poverty, if you don't have secure housing. So lots of these issues that we can see have been growing over the years recently are also issues that are going to make us more at risk of loneliness.
Why does loneliness have a detrimental effect on people's health, do you imagine?
Well, we know that loneliness impacts us in a whole range of ways, and actually we've been sort of growing our understanding over the years that actually it directly affects our stress mechanisms, so it can actually directly impact things like heart risk.
Yeah, but Kate, some of the most stressful moments in people's lives are when they're with their partners or husbands or lovers or girlfriends or wives, aren't they? Isn't that the most stressful moments?
Oh, absolutely. Anything can stress us out. And actually, sometimes we can be in a relationship or in connection with people, and it's a bad relationship, and it can actually make us more lonely. So loneliness is very complicated that way. But actually, we also know that when we're lonely, we're much less likely to do all the things that we know we should do to keep healthy. So we don't exercise as much, we eat worse, we're more likely to smoke and drink. So there's a really clear connection there between the issues.
Why does it have such a negative connotation? Surely one can be lonely and happy.
Well, you can be alone and happy.
Loneliness specifically describes the
negative emotion. Yeah. But you can be alone and happy. And so for some of those people who are living alone, that's a good choice. It works for them. It's what they want. But for some people, living alone is unfortunately a way of isolating themselves further. And it's going to make it harder for them to stay connected with their communities.
You're with the campaign to end loneliness. How would we achieve that?
Well, what we need to do is obviously support those people who are already feeling lonely to find ways back into the interconnection with their communities. But we also need to think about all the things that make life difficult for people in terms of finding ways to connect. So we need to think about our housing, transport infrastructure. You will never talk about loneliness without talking about the fact that our public transport infrastructure is a critical lifeline for people. We need to make sure that we're actually just making our communities nice places to be so that people can bump into each other, so that there are spaces where you don't have to pay a fortune to end up in a group with other people. All of those things will make a huge difference.
Grateful for your time, Kate Jopling. You're involved in the campaign to end loneliness. You've authored a report on loneliness, particularly focusing on the pandemic. Let's quickly pick up on here. This comes in from Karen. I love living alone. I can't stand people. I feel like that sometimes. Can I tell you when I can't stand people the most? Can I tell you? When I go through an airport. It's like they've all just come out of a nuclear bomb. They're wandering around in post-nuclear Armageddon. They turn, oh, there are lights. Oh, there's a shop. Oh, just move! For God's sake! I've got to gate 17. You've never seen an airport before. That's where I really don't like people, and I'm with you, Karen. Florian says, I experience loneliness when I'm fishing with my boat out on the sea and I can't see anyone. But I don't know whether that's supposed... I mean, this is the distinction between living alone, which I have done for years and years once the children moved out, and being lonely. And I do not mind, because I'm not with my wife every single night. What? It's fallen apart already? I'll give it till Christmas. And we're not alone, we're not together every single... Well, I'd be lucky, really, if we get to Christmas. But I've never felt lonely. We'll pick up on that. Coming up after the news, the morning after pill is now available for free in England. What will the impact of that be? Will people use it as a form of contraception? Malcolm Harrison is chief executive of the Company Chemists Association, and he said...
We're really, really delighted that this service has been launched. It's something that we at the CCA have been calling for many years. It means that women up and down the country will be able to access the morning after pill for free on the NHS, regardless of where they live.
More on that after this, 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. News headlines from Thomas Watts.
Hurricane Melissa's made landfall in Cuba after hitting Jamaica with winds of 185 miles per hour. Hundreds of thousands of people are without power and communications as a result of the catastrophic winds and flash flooding. Dozens of people are reported to have been killed in Israeli strikes on Gaza. The attacks were ordered after Israel accused Hamas of killing an IDF soldier and staging the recovery of a deceased hostage. More than 40 economists and policy experts have urged Rachel Reeves to scrap the two-child benefit cap. A letter seen by LBC says it's become the largest driver of rising child poverty and must be overturned in full at the budget. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for many places, strong winds and occasionally heavy rain further north, a high of 14 degrees.
We are just 100 days away from the Milano Cortina 2026 Olympic Winter Games, and I'm excited to announce that Global and LBC will be the proud official audio and outdoor partner of Team GB this winter. Now, I'm not about to put a pair of skis on, but when British athletes take on the world, we stand behind them. These are men and women giving their all for their country, and that's something we can all support. We'll be following and supporting our Team GB athletes and bringing you the latest from Milano Cortina 2026. As we wish the team good luck. I'm Nick Ferrari, this is LBC, and it's 9:32.
This is LBC.
Have you found peace?
No. I don't think that I will ever completely be at peace.
I don't want to live with this trauma anymore.
For many veterans, their battles continue after service. Help for Heroes stands with them every day, providing life-changing support that rebuilds lives. It's not just their fight, it's ours too. Together, we must help veterans find the peace they deserve. Search Help for Heroes today.
The click of the indicator. A rhythm that shifts your focus from the day's work to the journey that's truly yours. With the Clever Jazz Full Hybrid and its famous magic seats, you have the flexibility to handle everything from the school run to a weekend away. Because every journey matters. Book a test drive at Yeomans Honda today. Honda, the power of dreams.
At Pets in a Pickle, we're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT, protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
I'm going to talk to you, Anita, about loneliness in a moment, but Chris is in Weatherby and hanging on the line quite a long time to talk about house building. We started the hour by picking on the front page news that the House Building Federation, which is a pretty august body in this sphere, is warning the government they're not going to get near that 1.5 million. Very, very briefly, to go there, obviously, you're going to need 300,000 homes per year over the five-year period. They came in at about a shade under 200,000 last year. It's looking like 200,000 this year. That gets you four of the 1.5, which means you've got to play real catch-up over the remaining 3 years. Chris is in Weatherby. Chris, your point on this. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Fantastic programme, and I love your approach.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you,
sir. Like a breath of fresh air listening to you when you get these politicians on.
Right, that's
in
very
the box
sweet.
If you can. You cannot get a straight answer out of any of them. They must be coached to answer you.
Well, I don't know. We'll see how we do tomorrow. That's very kind of you, Chris. Are you in the house building game?
I am a developer. I own an airport. All sorts of things that we develop, and the planning process is an absolute farce. It takes 3 years to get a proper application through. The piece of land with 620 houses on it took 22 years to get it to the floor.
Has it always been this bad, Chris, or is it recent?
It's everywhere you go. They build a local plan, which is going to last 15 years. It takes them 3 years to get through it. They do a public inquiry. The whole thing, in Leeds especially, has fallen flat on its face again, and they go again and again. And I'll tell you now, Nick, they will not get that number. They won't get the permissions over the line, never mind build them.
The phone goes later today, and it's the Housing Secretary, Steve Reid, and he says, Chris, I heard you on LBC, you're obviously in this game. What do we need to do to hit these targets? What would you tell him, Chris?
What I would tell him is you have to take the control out of the local authority and put them in line and make them perform on a timescale. They try and put everything on to the person that put the application in. They want this survey, that survey. I'll give you an example. In Harrogate, if you want to build a house in Harrogate, you have to build 40% of the houses at cost, affordable homes. The land is £1 million an acre. If you go to Morley in Leeds, you only have to put 15% affordable housing. The land in Morley, which is a lower value suburb area, is more valuable than the land in the beautiful area of Harrogate due to the affordable housing. What a farce that is.
You don't see it changing, lastly, Chris?
I don't see it changing at all. But the planning process is an absolute shambles. It takes forever. And now what we're getting with developers, They're discarding the local plan, etc., and they're going to shove an application in wherever they can and go to a public inquiry, which will take 12 months. And then it gets the local authority are frightened to death to upset the locals. So they just push it down the road, It goes to the government, public inquiry. They make the decision. They say, oh, it wasn't our job that we didn't make the decision. The government have made the decision. But, of course, that can take up to 2 years to get it to a public inquiry.
Or 22 years in one case that you were involved in, Chris. I don't think anyone's going to be able to beat 22 years. Thanks for that, and thanks for your kind words about the show. On this subject, Henry Bondi says, I'm director of a building company. Up to two years ago, we were building in excess of 200 homes. Now, it's about 30. The biggest hurdle is building standard regulations with more than a year to improve schemes. Exactly what Chris has just said. Thank you for that. On the subject of loneliness, Hugh in Battersea. I know Hugh. I could hear from you, sir. You're the one who works with the military charity. I have two daughters. I've always urged them to get comfortable with themselves when they become comfortable being alone. My eldest now paints. My youngest writes songs when alone. Isn't that a great... What a great idea. What a great... I should have done that. But actually, fortunately, my boys are in great relationships. But yeah, what a good idea. Because when kids go off to university, they are going to have time on their own. Or someone who works with me says when she came to London, had no friends at all. And she's a very young woman with enormous social circle now, by the way. But I find it extraordinary that she felt quite lonely when she first got here. Anita's in Aldershot. What are you going to tell me, Anita? Good morning.
Hi there. I was widowed coming up to 5 years on November the 7th.
Oh, right. I'm sorry.
And I remember when my husband died, I remember thinking three things. I want to go to cruise, I want to die, and I want to live in Hartley Whitney.
I want to go on a cruise, did you say?
I want to go to cruise.
You want to go to cruise?
Cruise,
the counselling organisation. Right, I want to go to the cruise. Yep, got it, yep.
I want to live in Hartley Whitney, and I want to die. I haven't done any of them. And just as you said...
Right, okay.
That's supposed to be funny. Anyway, just as you said about cruise, and before I say what I wanted to say was, when I did say that to my daughter just 3 days after Dad died, my daughter went downstairs to the family as I was keeping my head up upstairs. She came up half an hour later to say, Mum, we'll organise a cruise for you, don't worry about it. Which, obviously, I said, darling, this is the last thing I want to do. I said, it's cruise counselling. Yeah, anyway, yeah. That's what I want to say. The help was there. I did the best thing I've ever done. And yeah. Also, there was a group that I joined as a result of one of the counsellors.
Yeah.
And they were all in the same position. And they've got a phone, the phone's at the other end of the line. So I really don't feel lonely.
I don't want to cause you any distress, but how many years had you been married before you lost your husband?
I've been married, for 44 years.
Married 44 years, okay.
Yeah.
What's the word I'm going to use? Hurdle, I suppose. What was the biggest obstacle to overcome when you suddenly didn't find your husband of 44 years beside you?
It's coming into the house and there's no one there. To say, I used to hear my husband sing when I used to come in after having done a 12-mile run. How was your new job today, Anita? Which used to infuriate me, but I miss... It's just that coming through the door and there's no one there to say, oh, hi there, how was your day? But, you know, there's help out there for people who do feel lonely, who do feel alone, and there is help out there for you if you wish to reach out for it.
Anita, thank you for your story. Look after yourself. You sound very, very vibrant. Of course, as you approach that anniversary next month, which will be obviously a tough time for you. Jennifer's in Kensington. Jennifer, do you live alone? Are you lonely? How would you classify it? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. First time call to your show, which I've been listening for years, I think your show is fantastic.
That's so sweet of you, so I think you're fantastic. Now, which is it? Are you lonely? Do you live alone? What is it, Jennifer?
Today I celebrate 50 years of being in London, having come from Guernsey.
Oh, wow. What brought you here? Work? Love?
I'd always wanted to travel abroad. Right. And I was 26 when I came to London.
Oh, yes.
And I was a baby nanny for 35 years.
Oh, right.
And I work for High Flyers, so I was like having two holidays a year.
Oh, wow.
So I travelled extensively, to lots of places abroad. So that was one achievement. And I've had a great life in London. Through age discrimination at the age of 63, I became unemployed.
Oh.
and I haven't worked since. But I became an events volunteer for two business people in 2014, and I'm still volunteering.
What sort of events do you volunteer for or at?
Well, I live in the borough of Kensington, and that's Earl's Court, and we've got more garden squares in Earl's Court than any other borough in London.
Yeah.
And one particular person I volunteer for, he's actually an estate agent, but he became a trained actor and singer before that.
Oh, wow.
And he puts on lots of different events, musicals, concerts in all the garden squares during the summer months and also in September and December. But I've also got lots of hobbies. I make my own greeting cards, so that's a lot of my own time. Volunteering is the best thing that anybody can do.
Well, I'm delighted it's worked out so well for you, Jennifer, and I can hear the enthusiasm for it in your voice. You have a good day today if you're out doing that work. Thanks, Jennifer. Thanks for your kind words about the show. Courtney's in Leamington Spa. Are you lonely?
Hello there. I have been lonely. I was diagnosed with loneliness and depression last year.
How could you be diagnosed with loneliness?
Yeah, I didn't even know that was a diagnosis, and it was a shock to me. It was a big shock to me, being a very sociable person.
I mean, I know you can be diagnosed with depression, and I'm sorry to hear that, but you were actually diagnosed with loneliness as well.
Yes, severe loneliness.
Gosh, okay.
So I went on a journey to help my loneliness, and I actually set up a women's community.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Social 30s. It's based in Warwickshire, and I now have over 5,000 women that come to my events and aren't lonely anymore.
Were they all living on their own, or they'd lost husbands or wives or whatever it might have been then?
It's completely varied. Some women have had babies, going through a change. Some women are going through divorce or got married.
Right.
Or they moved cities. There's all different reasons to why they felt lonely.
How long did it take you? I don't want to use the word get better, because that's such a pejorative, but how long did it take you to get over your depression then?
So it was 5 months of therapy.
Was it?
Until I finally thought, let me set up something to maybe help other women. And it just completely took off. I had no idea that other women felt that way.
Do you want to give the name of your organisation one last time, Courtney?
Yes, it's called The Social 30s, and it's incredible, and it's changing lives.
The Social 30s in Warwickshire. Courtney, have a good day. Thank you. Well done. Let's talk house building. The government's still talking up the numbers. The National House Building Federation say you're never going to get there. Andrew's in Benfleet. Andrew, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Thanks very much for taking my call, and I think your show is brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
And I'd like to say is a lot of the people you've been talking to this morning, well, frankly, I don't know where they get their answers from.
Well,
now,
what I want to say, Nick,
I want to put this over, because I've been trying to do this for such a long time. Now, I was in the construction industry for 37 years.
Right.
And I used to build for local councils.
Local authorities.
Anything to do, local, I used to build for.
Yeah.
And that was what I'd done. But that, when I retired, I'm retired now, my two sons took over my business. And they changed their what they'd done, and they do private building.
Right.
Now, basically, what they do mainly is they do extensions, they build one or two houses.
Okay.
Loft conversions and things like that.
Okay.
Now, their main thing, Nick, is that in the UK, there's nothing to stop you to be a builder. You can be a butcher one day and a builder the next. And this is what it is, a major, massive problem is, because these people get guys going about saying they're builders. And
there are various federations, aren't there, that you can belong to?
Yeah, but that's only... You just join it. They stick all the signs.
No, I see that. But Andrew, why, and that's an important point you make, and good luck to your sons running the business, but why would this affect hitting targets for the government?
Well, what happens is that a lot of these people going about pretending that they're builders, is they price the properties, and the run of the mill is this. Let's say there's an extension being done for a bungalow, for instance.
Yeah,
and they say to the client who haven't got a clue about these people. They're only saying, "Oh yeah, I'm a builder. I'll do the job for you."
But I don't see why this means we're missing targets.
Yeah, listen, I must get this through to you.
Well, really quickly, because I'm late to the news. Sorry, it's got to be the point you make now, sir.
Let me say one little thing. What they do is they put 150 grand the right way and the rest goes through in cash. And then they don't charge no VAT.
Right.
So the government are missing out on millions of pounds in VAT. And right. I'll tell you another thing, Nick. These consultants that work for local authorities,
they
anybody can be a consultant.
Okay. Not, of course, a medical consultant, but I would hope that a local authority would only take on a consultant if they had she had the necessary background. Andrew, good luck to your sons running the business. Thank you. I am so late to the news. I've got to get moving, but have yourself a good day. 9:47, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
The Jamaican Prime Minister has declared a disaster area after Hurricane Melissa hit the island. The migrant sex offender who was released from prison by mistake has now arrived in Ethiopia after he was deported. And Israel has continued airstrikes in Gaza overnight with dozens of people reportedly killed. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for many places, strong winds and occasionally heavy rain in the north. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M25 is closed clockwise between junctions 25 at the A10 and 26 at Waltham Abbey. It's because of a serious accident involving two lorries. Anti-clockwise traffic is also being held, and that's whilst the air ambulance is in attendance. As a result, there are huge delays both ways and on the surrounding routes, especially the A10. Also delays on the M4 eastbound from junction 4 at Heathrow to 3 at the A312, and that's because of an accident where one lane is closed. In Peckham, the Old Kent Road has now reopened and the delays are beginning to ease. But on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Hammersmith and City Circle and Bakerloo, and the Metropolitan line is part suspended.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
The Workers' Rights Bill is ping-ponging between the Lords and the Commons and, well, nobody seems to care.
James O'Brien on LBC.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. Stayshore is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So Stayshore with Stayshore Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at stayshore.co.uk/reviews.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay? But I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
We'll get back to talk about house building in just a moment, but a story you've heard on the news bulletins. Women across England will be able to obtain the morning after pill free of charge in pharmacies from today. The move, which is called by some as the biggest change to sexual health since the 1960s, is, say experts, a game changer. Just to fill you in nationwide, the morning after pill is already free in Scotland, Wales and in Northern Ireland. Let's go to Torun Govind, who's a pharmacist and independent health expert, and joins me now. Okay, are you in agreement with what I've just read out, that this is being welcomed by professionals such as yourself? Good morning to you.
Right, absolutely. This women's health has been too low on the agenda for too long. It's frustrating that women in the other nations have been able to access this free of charge, easier to access, faster access, which is really important, particularly with this medication. And we need to make sure that, especially we think about women having busy lives, there might be childcare and other things that they're having to look after. We shouldn't be making it hard to access healthcare.
Pardon my ignorance here. How much did it cost prior to today?
So about £30 would be the cost. There are two different types that are available over the counter at the pharmacy, and you have to have a consultation. So this will change the situation from it being a postcode lottery, where in some places women would access it free, or there will be more criteria involved. So I think this is about levelling out healthcare across the country and making sure that pharmacies receive the recognition that they deserve as the place at the heart of the community support. Women's health as well.
You won't be surprised to hear I've never availed myself of this, so I've never had a consultation. Were I to have one, what is it you would ask me?
Okay, well, I'd offer you the opportunity to go into the consultation room with a chaperone, so you can bring someone in with you to have a private, confidential conversation. We would then consider when the unprotected intercourse happened, when your last period was. We would ask about any allergies, any other medication that you were taking. We would run through your history. This is about making sure it's right for you as an individual, and we would also talk to you about regular contraception options as well. So I think it's about having that safe space for women to have their needs met in a local area as well. You shouldn't be having to travel miles to access care.
How big is the window? For how long is it operable after unprotected sex?
So there's two different types of morning after pill, emergency contraception. We want people to come and access it as soon as possible. For one of those medications, it can be within up to 72 hours.
Oh, right.
And this is why it's very key. I don't want people to be waiting. I want you to be able to come and see us, know that it will be a safe space for you. And also, I think we also have to recognise here, when people come and have these consultations with us, there are other things that come up for them. It might be that they're experiencing things like domestic violence or other concerns in their life, and that is a safe space where we can provide support. And where else can they access this if not in their pharmacy? So we've got to make sure pharmacies are fully resourced to support this as well.
How does it work?
How does the morning after pill work?
Well,
there's two different types of pill. And I think the key part for me is that we need to make sure you're having it as soon as possible. When we think about the morning after pill as well, what we've not gone on to here, Nick, and I don't want to leave this conversation without talking about this. The regular contraceptive pill is also available from the community pharmacy as well now.
Right.
That was not the situation, previously. And there isn't just the pill available when we talk about women's health and contraception. So things like implants, it might be we have a conversation with you about your regular contraception. You decide that you actually want to go and have an implant. Well, that's an implant which is put in your arm. At the moment, you have to go to a sexual health clinic to go and access that. Or sometimes you have to go and book an appointment at the hospital to get that. A lot of GPs have stopped offering that. So it's not just about the conversation that this will open with emergency contraception. It's about regular contraception as well.
Okay. And lastly, some people are saying this will become like regular contraception for a woman, that there are great health risks. I see you shaking your head, but I have to put to you what the people are saying. And that this is not a step forward in women's health. As a professional, how would you respond to that criticism?
Absolutely incorrect. If you think about when the contraceptive pill was first introduced, when the emergency contraception was first introduced, the outcry on that, we're in 2025, and we must understand that the world has changed. And actually, I think, as I've just said there, the conversations that this prompts will actually help with prevention of those needing the emergency contraceptive pill in the future. This is actually amazing in terms of having those conversations. And also, I think if you in your local environment as well, you can go back to that pharmacy. They will have a relationship with you. You will be able to have those confidential conversations, not just about contraception, Just lastly as well, I know we've not got much time, today as well, NMS is the new medicine service. If you've been newly prescribed antidepressants and you are over 18, you can now access extra support from your pharmacy as well.
Enjoyed our conversation. Thanks for all your input. And hopefully you got all the points across you wanted to. Thorun Govind, you're a pharmacist and independent health expert. We've just got a couple of minutes. Let's go. It's house building that's dominating our conversation. Juliet's in Richmond. You've been hanging on the line. Juliet, what do you tell me?
First-time caller, great property job. Person in central London.
Yep.
Run my own business for nearly 40 years.
Right, okay. You build after, them or sell them, or what do you do?
No, I sell, I buy, I rent.
Okay.
And I sort of can offer right across the board. But when your house builder gentleman called in, he talked about the council tax.
Mm.
It's not just paying the council tax, it's double council tax now. So where I have clients who are building properties, if they aren't being sold, they are now, the cost is so increased. And all I can tell you is, I go out there, I buy for clients who hopefully will come, keep coming and buying, but at the moment, their market is dead.
I was going to ask you, how's trade?
It's terrible. Rachel Reeves is acting like a robot. She is not listening. And the impact, I mean, luckily, I'm often on the other side, so I'm buying for people, but they're not coming, and she won't listen. And I've never nearly 40 years I've been in this market. I am absolutely apoplectic.
Why are they not buying? Why are they not coming, Juliet?
It's the uncertainty. The whole thing is uncertain. The money is not flooding through. We've had a mortgage problem for quite a long time, a funding problem for quite a long time. We've had interest rates going up. We've had interest rates calming down a bit. We were just getting level. And she's come in and she has completely wrecked the market. And I'm sorry, I personally hold her responsible. You know, it's terrible.
How nervous are you?
I'm very...
About the budget. Sorry, I was going to say, how nervous are you at events in just under a month's time?
I'm not sleeping.
Oh, Lord.
To be blunt, I'm not sleeping. And I can tell you, I see agents every day. They are very pale-faced. They're saying, Juliet, what do I do? How am I... I'm not getting paid. There's no money coming in. There's nothing happening. What do I do?
And is this just central London, or you operate in the suburbs as well?
No, I operate in suburbs. I live sort of outside London, so yeah. I can see it here.
Right.
But it's really, really catastrophic. Chelsea, I'm being told, is down by 26%.
Right.
Kensington is following in that route.
I have to leave it there, and I'm sure it's the same across the whole of London, because we are out of time. Juliet, thank you for all your input. I'm going to say these are trite words. I hope it turns round. Up to say none of the indicators seem to suggest it will. But thank you for all your input and good luck with your business. I'm done. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinions and put your news categories in the order you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. I'm done. James O'Brien is just limbering up the other side of the news. I'll be back with you, of course, tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you very much indeed, Nick. The latest in an irregular series of stories that are rather hard to make sense of, given the rest of the news agenda. I read this morning that dozens of schools are closing due to a lack of pupils. We may have a look at that a little later in the programme. There's another story. This time it involves people here illegally who are working, where the government is making enormous progress, but we wonder whether it matters, because the people that they are seeking to mollify or appeal to are not necessarily rational. Who else is thinking at this point of Telford tomorrow? You had to be there yesterday. But we will begin with the Workers' Rights Bill and one or two elements of it that are almost mind-bogglingly bad. Unless, of course, I'm missing something.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Hurricane Melissa has reached Cuba after leaving what's been declared a disaster area in Jamaica. The world's strongest storm of the year so far brought winds of 185 miles per hour to the island. Siobhan Brown is in the north coast port of Ocho Rios. He is one of hundreds of thousands of people without power.
There's currently no water as well, and that's, of course, because of the storm surge and the water. So it had to be cut just to protect individuals. Electricity is also out. I know that the government had brought in external partners to assist with reconnecting the island immediately.
Officials in the capital, Kingston, have warned people to watch out for crocodiles that may have been displaced by flash flooding. A sex offender freed from prison by mistake is now back in Ethiopia. The Home Office has confirmed Haddish Kabatu has been deported after he was arrested in North London on Sunday. A Home Office minister has told LBC that asylum seekers could be moved to military barracks as soon as next month. There are plans to use sites in Inverness and East Sussex to house about 900 people awaiting immigration decisions. It's part of a commitment to end the use of migrant hotels. The Border Security Minister, Alex Norris, has pushed back against reports of delays to the plans.
We're intending to have people on site by the end of November. You know, we need to make sure the sites are safe, both on site and for the immediate community, and that's what we'll be doing. But let's remember the goal that we're in service of here. We inherited this situation where hotels up and down this country are being used to this purpose, all the economic impact that has, all the impact that has on the community. We are going to close every single one of those hotels.
Dozens of people are reported dead after a series of Israeli strikes in Gaza. The Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, ordered the attacks after accusing Hamas of killing a soldier and staging the recovery of a hostage. Hamas has rejected the claims. Economists and academics have warned the two-child benefit cap is causing long-term economic damage. A letter to Rachel Reeves from 40 leading figures and seen by LBC says the limit must be overturned in the budget next month. The government says it's drawing up an ambitious strategy to tackle child poverty. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 41 points at 97.41. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 13. LBC weather, most places seeing some sunshine and showers, but strong winds and some heavier rain further north. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
In 2024, a hangry fan posted, "Why do other countries have better McDonald's menus than ours?" So, we went abroad and heisted some worldwide favourites. The World Menu Heist. 9 of the most wanted McDonald's menu items from around the world. Now in the UK. Until 25th of November from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after ten. Do you know one of the daftest things I can do at the top of the show? Good morning, by the way. I hope you're well. It is to refer to a few stories that I am not actually going to invite you to ring in about. But guess what I'm about to do? A few things in the news today that tickle my sort of ivories. The first is a story very like yesterday's. If you weren't listening yesterday, we took a call from a lovely lady in Telford. You could tell she was lovely because she described herself as disagreeing with me on many, many subjects. But she represents a brand of conservatism that is completely unrepresented in British democracy at the moment. In fact, she represents a political perspective that is completely unrepresented in British politics at the moment. And if you think, so what? It's just one woman in Telford. It's also a political perspective occupied by, off the top of my head, Sir John Major and Lord Heseltine. You know, two of the most significant conservatives of our lifetimes. Whether you like them or not, I kind of like both of them. Heseltine more than Major. Major is one of those politicians. That's a nice word. One of those politicians who whose reputation has been enhanced by not being in office. Something that is yet to happen to Liz Truss, of whom more later. But I'm obsessed with that constituency of what you might call decent Tories, or Tories who are may well be concerned about some elements of the immigration situation, but they are not absolutely obsessed with it to the point of Sarah Poachin or indeed Robert Jenrick-style racism. And I kind of find myself wondering about what the current government's policies in that particular area will achieve and who they will appeal to. So yesterday it was the hotels. Today we learn it may not actually save any money, but it's designed to quell public disquiet. And there's another story about the absolute plummeting, or rather the huge rise, an incredible rise, in the arrests of people working illegally in the UK while their applications are being processed. So if you have legitimate concerns about these issues, and in fact that was one of the things that Telford Tamara picked up on yesterday, then you should actually be celebrating on that very specific metric, that very specific statistic. And I think the future, the next round, the next cycle of UK politics will depend upon just how many people actually have, quotes, legitimate concerns, and how many are nativist bigots,
like Sarah Poachin and Robert Jenrick, and of course all the other people that trip so easily off your tongue when we open up conversations like this. But we're not going to talk about that first, and we're not going to talk about the schools either, because, well, I can't make head nor tail of this story. It's nationwide. It's up and down the country. It's only 38 schools at the moment, but it seems completely at odds with everything that we're constantly being told, that they're shutting primary schools because of a shortage of pupils. We may get onto that a little later in the programme. Oh, and one other thing on the hotel story. The companies contracted by the Home Office to provide asylum accommodation are on course for another record-breaking year of profits. So it's not all bad news. The companies contracted by the Home Office under previous governments, we must be reminded, are on course for another record-breaking year of profits. Hurrah! I wonder what parties they have historically donated most money to and what on earth they got in return. Cronies, VIP lanes, etc, etc, etc. One of the many casualties of conversations that are dedicated to immigration and culture wars and all the rest of it is that we lose sight of the stuff that affects us most. It's a funny thing to reflect upon, that the stuff that affects us most. I use us a little loosely because I'm not affected by 0 hours contracts or indeed by anything that is in the employment rights bill that Angela Rayner championed and which is currently being steered through Parliament with a limited success. I'll explain more in a moment. But the stuff that directly affects us, for example, income tax increases, which I hope are coming. There you go. You can chisel that on a headstone and stick it in your garden. I hope income tax rises are coming, even though they will leave me worse off, because we need them. The country needs to slightly rebalance the distribution of taxation as well as the distribution of wealth, and it just needs recognition that when times are hard, you have to dig deep. So that's on the way as well. That affects us directly, and we don't really talk about it as much as perhaps we should. You look at the front pages, you look at news coverage, and you don't see much about the workers' rights bill, or as they call it, the employment rights bill. And I don't know what that says. It's a bit dry. You can't use it to whip up hatred against anybody except trade unions, and that all feels a little bit 1980s at the moment, although these things always come back round again. Still waiting for single mothers to be in the firing line, although it may be that social change and demographic change has finally let them off the hook of the tabloid Tory alliance. But I'm intrigued by the House of Lords rejecting the government's employment rights bill on two particular fronts. I'm intrigued by them opposing Labour's move to force employers to offer guaranteed hours to employees from day one. Listen, I've said it's dry, but it's my job to make it not dry. I nearly said wet then, but that would have been weird. It's my job to make it not dry. That's really important. I want you to imagine that you're starting a job and you don't know how many hours you're going to work. I can't quite